CD full of them.
Excellent.
Is there a favorite on here we can go into our break with?
Yeah. One that's never been aired. So.
Okay.
Never previously aired. Hey. Real Men of Genius.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Yeah.
Real Men of Genius.
Mr. Fink, piano prodigy.
Drew and Mike in the morning. Yes. The broadcast program. On the Riff.
101.1
WRIF.
Riff.
Detroit's rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Make your night in the town even better without hitting your wallet with the Riff's Dine Online. You're only one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price. Dine Online. And eat for less with WRIF.com. The Riff presents your opportunity to save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants, like Denny Street Roadhouse, located on West Village Drive in the heart of West Dearborn. Denny Street Roadhouse, featuring great American food and great American music. Log on to www.wrif.com. You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price. But quantities are limited, so you'd better act fast. It's all from the station that delivers you more. 101. The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings for Motor City businesses. Like Buddy's, one of the nation's five best pizza places, as recognized by the Food Network, invites you to book your holiday party now at any of their nine metro area locations. Dine in or take out. Buddy's Pizza is number one in Detroit. Log on today and save with Detroit's rock station at WRIF.com.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
American people have a right to know.
When you get loud. When you need it live. You need the Riff's Midnight Metal.
Tuesday through Thursday nights on the Riff.
Join Screamin' Scott Randall for the loudest hour on your radio.
That's what this is all about.
Midnight Metal.
Midnight Metal on the Riff. Call in your heavier-than-hell request at 313-298-WRIF. You can also fax in or email for requests and your chance to win killer Riff swag.
Send your faxes to 248-398-6219 or email screamin@wrif.com.
Get your fix of the heaviest 60 minutes in the Motor City. It's Midnight Metal.
Is America a better place to live because of our efforts?
Tuesday through Thursday nights with Screamin' Scott.
From your home for Midnight Metal, the home of rock and roll. 101. The Riff.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We tried calling Hallmark, the wannabe actor who was on the reality show Wife Swap. We ended up talking to his dad and got a little more information than we probably needed.
They had an interracial marriage on that show, which was kind of a positive step for ABC. Did people give him a hard time about that?
It was a big deal with me. Don't tell him.
Oh, is that right? What was it?
I married a black boy.
Was that kind of hard to get used to? Uh-huh.
Well, he went with her about a year, and then he told me he was going to marry, and I asked him if there's any way I could make him change his mind.
Okay, here it comes, folks. Here's the message.
Generals gathered in their masses, just like witches at black masses. Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction. In the fields of bodies burning, as the war machine keeps turning. Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord,
welcome to the Night Call Show. Peter Werby here with you. We'll play all of that in about 2 hours, 1 o'clock. That was at 1 a.m. Eastern Time. That was suggested by one of our listeners. Why am I having such a hard time? Or can you tell that I'm having a hard time? Well, imagine this. This is right now. It's 10 degrees outside in Detroit, Michigan. I know people are listening all over the world on the World Wide Web. In fact, I might have mentioned someone last week, and I didn't have their email, but welcome to Christopher, listening in Prague, Czech Republic, that they are listening on the Internet. So, got folks all, besides just the Detroit area here, and big signal on WRIF, also all around the country, all around the world. But imagine this, 10 degrees outside here in Detroit, but I'm in nice, warm building. In fact, it's too warm. I don't know, because we are moving out of this joint in about 2 or 3 days. This entire studio is dark except for one of these little clip-on lamps, right? So, and when we called the engineers, they said, "Oh, yeah, we're getting out of here, so it doesn't matter." So someone said it's like college radio. Anybody who's done college radio would be an improvement. So we'll go ahead with we'll go ahead with all of this. This news flash just in. Eric writing in. I got to move this and my light. What will happen? Eric writes in from Livonia to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Did you know that Ted Nugent has been living in Crawford, Texas for the last 16 months? He has a ranch right next to W's. I saw the story on Yahoo News. And indeed, Motor City Madman Ted Nugent turns Texas. Hey, Ted! Adios, MF! We're glad. No problem, man. So he's left the compound in Jackson, Michigan. So he's down there. Good music, although someone wrote me and disputed that. Good music, dumb as a stump when it comes to politics. So good. Hang out in Texas. Maybe he left Michigan because it's a blue state. All right, maybe because it went for Kerry, but who knows. Speaking about music, and in this case, bad music. So let me see. I got to tip this light here a little. If you want, you can call, by the way. As you know, phone buttons light up. So even in the dark, and this is my real fear, that the whole thing is going to go dark. In fact, no one here even thought I was going to do the gig tonight. I don't know why. I talked to the program director. He said, "Do you want the night off because of the holidays?" And I said, "No, yeah, I only do this once a week. I mean, I got other duties here at WRIF. I'm the public affairs director, so I do other stuff. But I enjoy doing this show. I enjoy talking to all of you. I enjoy hearing your opinions. So I'm here. So I don't know. I'm almost thinking, man, maybe I should have stayed home given the physical setup here. But, hey, what do they say in show business? The show must go on. All right, we're talking about music. Can I find this stuff? Yeah, because I got one little light here. You know, I like most all music. Now, basically, I'm a rocker. Started, actually, the first thing I did on radio was a talk show on WRIF way back in the day. But then I did a whole stint as a rock and roll DJ here and on other stations in Detroit that were rockers. In fact, I did them all, as a matter of fact. WABX, and this means only stuff to local people. And W4 when it was a rock station, which is going to get me to my subject. And Wheels, you know, WRIF kicked all their butts, so you know, we're only the only modern big rock station left in town. So I like other musics, though. I love jazz. Love to go to jazz concerts. I go to the Detroit Symphony Orchestra, one of the jewels of American symphonic music right here in our town. Both the DSO itself, the Detroit Symphony Orchestra, and Orchestra Hall. Also, Detroit Opera Theater. Love that. Go to a lot of their performances. Well, not a lot. Some. And what else do I go to? Folk music. I mean, so I really like a widespread, like many of you. I mean, some of you are just rockers. Nothing else. But don't rock. Get out of town. But I don't feel like that. But there's only one kind of music. Well, light rock. I don't like that very well. You know, they always say, "Let's talk light rock." And they're kind of geared to, you know, women. But it's okay. A lot of women are rockers, too. And even that's okay. No, I don't know. The worst, here's what I'm getting to. The worst music, the music I hate the worst, that I can't stand even a few chords of, and with every declarative sentence, there's always a few little exceptions, of course, is country music. Can't stand the stuff. Although, I was thinking, remember last week, or was it the week before, I played that late 60s, early 70s tune by the Flying Burrito Brothers, My Uncle. about draft Dodgers going to Canada, and that had a country tune. Crosby, Stills, and Nash, a lot of bands in the '60s into the '70s kind of had like a country tune, country feel to it in many ways. So that's what I mean. There are some exceptions, but modern country music, that kind of sappy, I don't even know, you know, folksy, what would you call it? Cornpone sincerity, and it's a self-congratulatory music. I mean, in other words, they're always singing to themselves. I mean, we do it as rockers. We say, we're rocking. You know, and that's one thing, you know, just to say, because we are a lot of times. When you say you're rocking, you know, you actually are rocking, whatever the hell that means. You know, you're at a concert, you know, you're jamming at home, whatever. So you're rocking. But what country music does, it's this self-congratulatory, hokey, Roz Dizzy, could we just interrupt you just a little bit to get you the answer to the phones there that are coming in? All right, thank you. Do they work at all? 313-298-WRIF. Roz Dizzy is our producer and also our phone screener. But I know he was just completely taken with what I was saying. If you want to defend country music, call ahead. And the other thing, it's, you know, I've got all this sappy patriotism and macho kick butt stuff. I'm going to put my boot up there, but... And then these guys come on television, and they got these hats. They always got these silly-ass hats. You know, you ever heard the expression, all hat, no cattle? Well, that's what's up with those big hats? I don't get it. Anyways, I usually don't even... I'm so far from everything that they're doing and they're about, I don't even hear too much about them. In fact, first time I really thought about country music is when the Dixie Chicks were the victims of this concerted effort to really kick them out of the country milieu, which they did. They got out. They said, we're rockers now. And remember they said that they were ashamed that George W. Bush was from Texas. When they were in London, they said this. And then what happened, all these country stations dropped them. Because they said all these listeners were listening, listeners were calling in and saying these gals are so unpatriotic. Natalie Maines, her sister, and the other woman, I don't even know them that well. But what it turned out, it was like a Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity scam that they encouraged all their non-country listening listeners to call in to these stations and get them kicked off. Well, anyways, every one of their concerts was sold out, the Dixie Chicks. Their album stayed at number one. So it was a real fraud. But they said later for these country boys, right? In fact, Natalie Maines, on her, I don't know, what do you wear? Shorts or something like that? Or skirt. She's wearing, it says F-U-T-K, like F-U, you know what I mean? Toby Keith, who is some big honcho in country music. I mean, if you put on any Toby Keith, I mean, I know the man exists, and he was about the fourth or fifth largest concert draw. But if you put on the most popular Toby Keith album and the most popular song, I would have never heard it before. So badly I dislike country music. But but like I say, it's kind of a fraud too. I mean, they put on this country stuff with the hats and all that. All hat, no cattle. Now, there is this woman, I don't know how, I think she's popular. Her name is Chelly Wright. I might even be saying it wrong. Chely. That's how little I know about this genre of music. By the way, every time some black form of music becomes popular, country music becomes real popular. So just like in the 70s, like disco got real popular, then country got popular. Now rap and, you know, people buying rap aren't all African-Americans. African-Americans do a lot of it. Whites do a lot. But obviously the record-buying population is predominantly Euro-American. So that's who's buying it. So the people that can't abide that or can't abide rock, whatever. You know, that kind of combines the rap vocal style with guitar-driven rock and roll. They don't even like that, so they're going to go, you know, I took my baby, you know, that kind of stuff. All right. A lot of it is this kind of grassroots crypto-military stuff, okay? So there's this woman, Chelly Wright. Someone call me in at 313-298-WRIF if I'm saying her name wrong. What could it be? Kelly? C-H-E-L-Y, Chile. Anyway, she's got this song out, The Bumper of My SUV. Right? You ready for that? The Bumper of My SUV. Now, here is the lyrics. You go to anycountrymusiclyrics.com. I don't know how the tune goes. I've got a bright red sticker on the back of my car, says United States Marines. And yesterday, a lady in a minivan held up a middle finger at me. Does she think she knows what I stand for or the things I believe just by looking at the sticker for the U.S. Marines on the bumper of my SUV? Whew. Man. I mean, all right, let's look at a few things. First, did this really happen? Let's give her the benefit of the doubt and say that, in fact, this incident happened. So she's driving an SUV. Someone's in a minivan. What are they trying to say there? I mean, what's up with kind of, I don't know, social class or, and it gets into social class a little deeper into this, or what? I had a bumper sticker for the longest time on the back of my American sedan that said, Bush lied, people died. Bush lied, people died. In other words, there were no weapons of mass destruction. Bush knew there wasn't. This whole monstrous mess in Iraq is based on these lies that the Bush mob told. And the only reaction I ever got from people were people rolling up and saying, I like your bumper sticker. Where'd you get it? I got notes under my windshield. Where can I get a bumper sticker like yours? And no one ever said anything directly derogatory towards me. But all the time, I was looking in my rearview mirror, and there'd be like these guys in SUVs or those big trucks, you know, stuff like that. And they'd be looking at me fierce, like that, you know, they'd be real close to my bumper, like they were just run me over. You son of a bitch, you got that bumper sticker on. This is what I'm anticipating. And I'm like thinking of things when they roll around to me that I'm going to say, well, you know. But then, you know, my wife's telling Peter, remember your Tai Chi. Just breathe deep, have compassion for them, and roll on without saying anything. So ultimately, I was going to say nothing, although no one ever said anything to me. Then my car, which was fairly new, under the warranty, went on the fritz, and I got a loaner. And then I'm driving. It was an identical car, right? So it has no bumper sticker on it, and I'm looking in the rearview mirror, and there are these aggressive-looking guys in SUVs and big trucks looking like they're going to run me over. So I think it wasn't even about the bumper sticker. Meaning, when Chili Wright says this woman in lady in a minivan held up a middle finger at me because of her bumper, the sticker for the U.S. Marines on the bumper of my SUV. Maybe she did something bad in traffic. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe this stupid song about the bumper of my SUV, which is really, you know, about the whole war is about getting enough oil to run these damn things. Maybe that was it. Yeah? But look, here's the rest of the song. So I hope that, and then she tells this whole stupid story. I hope that lady in her minivan turns on her radio and hears this from me as she picks up her kids from their private school. Huh. Now, where the hell does this come from? Here is Chili Wright, or whatever her name is. Someone, come on, 313-298-WRIF. How do you say her name? She looks in the rearview mirror. Someone flips her the bird. It could have been for a traffic incident. She thinks it's because of her bumper sticker. And I already told you that I misperceived the reaction to bumper stickers. You know, people are driving. These bumper stickers are little. Anyways, I hope the lady in her minivan turns on her radio and hears this from me as she picks up her kids from their private school and drives home safely on our city streets or to the building where her church group meets. What's that? What does he mean? Yeah, that's why I've got the sticker for the U.S. Marines on the bumper of my SUV. Well, if music has come down to this, folks, we're in cultural trouble. We are. Let's see here. Egg writes in. Same thing. Why does she think she got the finger? Because of her bumper sticker. She probably was driving like a jerk. Huh. I thought I saw something else in here, too. Anyway, get this. I'm going to call her Chelly till. Do we know how it's pronounced? Shelley. Shelley. Oh, man, so I was way off. I mean, Shelley is S-H-E-L-L-Y. Yeah. It's not, okay. All right, Shelley, I'll call her right. All right, how about this? So she's got this super patriotic song. I'm telling you, I don't know this music at all. I mean, I can't stand it. It's one of those, you know, you're flipping around the dials, and you go, and I, gone, like that. Anyways, Shelley Wright fires fan club head over military flap. Here's this great patriot singing about all the soldiers in her family. A former member of country music singer Shelley Wright's fan club blew the whistle on 17 volunteers who impersonated military personnel or their families to promote Wright's latest song, The Bumper of My SUV. The radio play campaign was all part of an organized effort by leaders of the fan club who encouraged volunteers to do such thing as tell them your husband is a Marine, whatever it takes. Now, let's see. I didn't do this. Wright said she was shocked, saddened, and deeply upset by this unethical behavior, and she referred to the person that did it, Chuck Walter, as an unpaid volunteer who acted without my knowledge or direction. The only problem is Chuck Walter is a longtime friend who has headed her fan club since 1996. So, come on. Let's see. There was one other little piece in here, I thought. Shelley will be performing her song Bumper of My SUV live on the Fox News channel on New Year's Eve. Where else? Okay. Let's see. This is from Eric in Ann Arbor, calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Natalie Maines from the Dixie Chicks said on Bill Maher's show when appearing with the other two Dixie Chicks that FUTK means freedom, understanding, truth, and knowledge, something which in my view, and you may agree, country western music does not exactly encourage. Well, that's nice if she says that. I think it means F.U. Toby Keith. All right. Maybe that's enough to set everybody off. Everyone said, I wasn't even supposed to work tonight, according to some of these people here. I said that earlier. Well, right now, this is getting a little weird. I got like one little light. It's hooked onto the microphone. I feel like I should be going, dude, you, come on. Oh, no. I mean, I just saw that on television, that 70s show or something like that. Roth Dizzy, where do we go first? He gives me, is that the peace sign? That's line two. Hey, do you realize, dude, that in our facility incarnation next week, we're not going to be able to look at one another? You're going to be in another room, and you're going to be giving me computer messages. It's Jim from Taylor. He wants to talk about, what's your name? Shelley Wright. All right. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, this is Chris from Romulus, actually.
Hi, Chris.
Just had a little I really enjoy your show, Bert, Peter.
Yeah.
Listen to it just about every week.
Thank you.
And to me, country music is patriotic. Okay, the Toby Keith song, everybody's heard it pretty much. And I think country music is...
I never heard it.
You should listen to it once in a while. Country music is... I like rock and roll, but I love country. The only music I can't stand is rap.
I would listen to a year of gangster rap before I would listen to 10 minutes of country.
Why?
I don't know. Because it's fake. It's fake patriotic. It's fake cornpone. It's fake self-congratulatory. Almost said it. Baloney. Baloney. But you know what? I'll bet you when I said earlier that I like to hear opera and classical music, there probably people went, oh, man, I would rather listen to a year of country than 10 minutes of opera.
Well, I can't stand to listen to more than about 20 minutes of anything in
okay.
particular. But, I mean, I also listen to classical and all that. And it's just country is it all tells a story, whether it's true or BS or what. But it's worth listening to. It all tells a story. And it's like you say, I guess it's kind of fake if you listen to it put too much into it.
Okay. I mean, that's fair enough. And you know what? I was just trying to get a reaction, obviously. Ultimately, all music is a matter of taste.
Exactly.
I mean, my wife does not like to listen to WRIF, and she listens to these stations where I always say, it's not rock and roll. She says, they say it's rock and roll. It's light rock. I said, that's not rock and roll.
But it's from what period you grew up in.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I associate rock and roll with older rock and roll, whereas now rock and roll isn't, it's not even, it's just a shadow of what it used to be.
Yeah. You know, part of it is, I don't know. I guess in some ways, you're right. I like a lot of the older stuff, but stuff from the 80s, the 90s, and a good part of the new stuff has that same dynamic quality to it, I think, that that we associate with older stuff. All right, thank you very much, Chris, from Romulus. I appreciate your call. Yeah, I'm probably stepping on a lot of toes, and I did it purposely in some ways. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
How you doing, Peter?
Doing good.
Tim Flores, first-time caller, long-time listener.
Okay. is everybody going to call up and defend country music?
I just wanted to say that a lot of country music is self-congratulatory, but there are a lot of Lynyrd Skynyrd, Allman Brothers influences out there, like Montgomery Gentry, who do play the southern rock and roll type style of music.
Yeah.
And I can't defend, like, Shelley, who sings that song about the
bumper of my bumper. SUV.
Yeah. I can't defend her, but there is a lot of good country music out there. My ex-wife actually turned me on to it. I'm a Godsmack, Alice in Chains fan, so. And I do listen to a little bit of country music on the side. But, yeah, there is a lot of good country music out there that is not like the rest of it. I do like a little bit Toby Keith and stuff like that, but there is some good stuff out there that you just got to listen and find what you can handle.
Well, yeah, I guess you're probably right. Although I don't know if I'm going to. I don't know if you can. You know, isn't there a phrase you can't teach an old rock dog new tricks? Something like that. All right, my friend, thank you for calling us at 313-298-WRIF. Questions, comments on the internet, call talkyes@yahoo.com. Short is best. If they're real long, I'll try to read them tomorrow. If you want them read on the air, try to make them short. I can't guarantee I will read them on the air, though. But always interested to hear it from you. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter. It's Pat from Ferndale.
Hi, Pat.
Yeah, I saw a country singer a couple months ago at the Royal Oak Theater, and I'm a total rocker, you know, and you're even kind of turning it up a little bit, talking about jamming tonight and, you know, all that other stuff. And I'd like to ask that last caller what kind of bumper sticker he had on his car, because anybody who listens to country doesn't appreciate music. You know, and they're usually these Bible-beating right-wingers. But beyond that,
yeah.
I heard this female country singer at Royal Oak. Her name was Mindy Smith. And she did a song called Come to Jesus about her mom dying of cancer. It totally moved me, and I couldn't believe what I was experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
So any form of music can really, you know, move you, and it's these idiots moving these pickup truck drivers, you know, with their Bush stickers and their Bibles, you know, that are screwing up our country. So,
well, I was thinking, the whole Southern rock gang, 38 Special and ZZ Top and Lynyrd Skynyrd and the Allman Brothers. I think the Allman Brothers, if they're still, are they back together? I don't know. All backed Bush. I was really disappointed in ZZ Top, but I was thinking that, and I never liked 38 Special particularly, but the Allman Brothers, who did some country tinge stuff and did, you know, a lot of blues tinge stuff, I always liked them. So I was thinking too about old Crosby, Stills and Nash stuff, you know, like Teach Your Children. I don't know if you know that old song.
Yeah.
Yeah. That. Just plain old country song. In fact, they had a number of them. So I probably am being...
I've seen Dickie Betts with Edgar Winter at like the center stage.
There you go.
Edgar Winter was the shit. That's all I can say. Oops, sorry about that.
That's all right. I just lost my license. I can get another one some other time. I'll start a career at another station. No, I'm only kidding. All right. Thanks a lot. I appreciate your call. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, this is Amy from Ypsilanti.
Hi, Amy.
One thing I want to say is, that there's a difference between the music and the lyrics. there can be some good country music, like old country music, like Willie Nelson, Skaggs and Rice, stuff like that.
You know, you're right.
Lyrics now, I mean, like you said, this self-preaching and all these messages, I think it's just people trying to sell an album. I don't think it's really about what they feel or what they mean.
Yeah, I was thinking, too, what about Johnny Cash? I love Johnny Cash.
Right. I mean, and he didn't have to sing about God in the Bible to get on the air. But the thing is, the bumper sticker is, I guess I'm a liberal, I'm a Democrat, I'm just sick of people thinking that I don't support our troops. I support our troops, I just don't think they should die for a stupid cause. So this bumper sticker thing just is really annoying to me.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that's happened, of course, is this began as a war for empire and a war for oil. And everything has gone wrong, of course, and it's getting worse and worse and worse. You know, in Iraq, they wanted to have election observers, and they're afraid to go into the country. They're going to observe the election from Jordan. It would be like someone observing election from in the United States from Ottawa, in Ontario or something like that. It has two facets to it, the war. One, it's a war for war. I mean, Bush has to win this war. Like Nixon said, I will not be the first president to preside over a losing American war, which, of course, he was. And Bush stands the possibility of becoming the second. And so he is willing to fight, to the last American soldier. And, the Iraqi civilian casualties and what's happening in their cities be damned. So all the stuff about when you start talking to people about weapons of mass destruction now, it's like you brought up Monica Lewinsky. You know what I mean?
I do. Well, yeah. The only way that he can, I guess, win this, if that's even possible, is if he kills 75% of the country. I mean, these people, you don't want to call them terrorists or insurgents. If someone invaded my country, I would fight back, period. I mean, you can't. I just with this election and everything, I guess just being a liberal, these moral issues. I have a moral issue with people dying for no reason. I have a moral issue with the fact that people are starving and dying in our country. People are living in ghettos where they have to sleep on the floor so they don't get shot through their window at night. Yet we're over there putting billions and billions of dollars into something that, started off as his Partners for a New American Century project and, mm-hmm. Isn't going anywhere.
You got it, Amy. And actually, when we come back, I'll talk a little bit about where our money is going and where our money isn't going. And it's really our. People will talk about we're in Iraq. Well, we're not in Iraq. George W. Bush, a politician, has ordered the army, the armed forces, into Iraq by virtue of his position of commander-in-chief. So I'm not in Iraq, and the way I support the soldiers is just the way, I don't know if you know this, but the way USA Today, all of a sudden the publisher's name's out of my brain, but he has called for immediate withdrawal of American troops from Iraq, and that's how I think is the best way we can support our troops. And
I agree. Then
we need a bumper sticker for that. Thank you, Amy.
Thanks a lot.
All right, bye-bye. So anyways, but when I talk about, we're going to be talking about where our money is going, I really mean every one of us listening, either that we're directly contributing, like I am, if you have parents that are contributing, where it's going and where it ain't going. Right back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Peter will be back to take more of your calls right after this.
Okay, then. I'm here at the mall to tell people about the big year-end sales drive going on right now at your local Volkswagen dealer. And
excuse me, young man.
Yes.
I'm knitting my grandson a sweater for the holidays. You think he'd like periwinkle or sage?
I think he'd like a Jetta.
Oh, I can never knit a car.
Well, you don't have to. During the big year-end sales drive, you can lease an 05 Jetta for just $179 a month. What do you think?
I think a periwinkle turtleneck would be cute on you.
Thanks, but I have my own grandmother. So stop by during our big year-end sales drive for great deals on pretty much every car on the lot, including a Jetta GL for just $179 a month.
39-month lease, 933 required signing. Excludes taxes, license, other options, and dealer charges. Offer ends January 3rd, 2005. See your dealer or call 1-800-DRIVE-EW for details.
Test drive a new Volkswagen during the year-end sales drive. Visit VW.com for a Detroit and Ann Arbor area Volkswagen dealer near you.
Are you one of the millions of men embarrassed by premature performance in bed?
I'm Dr. Richard Cohen, MD, men's performance specialist. Premature E is the most common of all sexual issues for men, but now you can prolong your performance and your pleasure with the free 30-day trial of Maxtrol, the new climax control system for men. Maxtrol gives you greater control during intimacy, so you can delay the urge and last longer, which means more pleasure for you and for her. Maxtrol is the confidential, non-prescription way to get the confidence and endurance you want and she needs in bed. I'm so sure of it, I'll send it to you free for 30 days.
Call now and try Maxtrol free for 30 days. You pay only shipping and handling. 1-800-270-9580. 1-800-270-9580. Call now and try Maxtrol free for 30 days. 1-800-270-9580. 1-800-270-9580.
Men, the people at Molson are all about helping you make friends. And while we know an iron stud like you is normally money in the bank, sometimes even you can get caught inappropriately staring at a woman. But it doesn't mean you have to go home hitless, because we've developed scripts written by professionals to help you turn those moments when you're off your game into an all-star performance.
Excuse me, do you mind?
Mind what?
You're staring at my thong.
Yes. Yes, I was. When I saw it, it reminded me of a leash.
What?
A leash that looks like my puppy's.
Oh.
His name's Buddy.
Oh, that is so cute.
Yeah, he's very cute. Poor little three-legged guy.
Oh.
I rescued him in a flood while I was volunteering in Botswana.
Really? Well, then.
Will most women buy this? Well, we're still testing. Molson, making friends since 1786. Imported from Canada by Molson USA, LLC, Golden, Colorado. In 1786, John Molson began brewing beer using the finest Canadian water and barley from a land we now call Saskatchewan. We left well enough alone.
More Night Call with Peter Worthy, next on The Rim.
You've heard about plastic surgery, but you're afraid it might leave you looking, well, plastic. I'm Dr. Jeffrey Cole. Done properly, cosmetic surgery won't necessarily give you an unnatural look. Breast implants come in all shapes and sizes. Maybe you just want a little something extra to make you look better in your clothes. Or you want your proportions to be just a little more proportional. Call my office now to schedule a free consultation. I'll take the time to explain cosmetic surgery and show you the procedures that are right for your shape and size. You won't look fake. You'll look better and feel better about yourself. Find the difference the right cosmetic surgeon and surgery can make.
Call 1-800-523-3149 to schedule your free cosmetic surgery consultation with Dr. Cole. Dr. Cole is one of the area's most trusted cosmetic surgeons. If there's something about your body that you want to change, Dr. Cole will recommend the right cosmetic surgery for you. So call 1-800-523-3149. As always, Dr. Cole has many low-interest financing options available. Call 1-800-523-3149. That's 1-800-523-3149.
The Fitness Show returns to the Novi Expo Center January 7th through the 9th, and you don't want to miss this one. Meet Monica Brandt, former Miss Fitness Olympia bodybuilder and personal trainer, for question and answer sessions and autograph signings on Friday and Saturday. Check out the Baseball Expo with former Detroit Tiger star Milt Wilcox, featuring a home run derby, speed pitch, and clinic. See judo competitions all weekend at all levels for men, women, boys, and girls. You can even participate. Call Dave at 248-489-3847 for details. At the Health and Fitness Show, you'll see over 10,000 square feet of quality hot tubs at unbelievably low prices from Master Spas Pool and Spa Spectacular. Visit the Sport Court, where you can win free throw competition prizes from DC Sports, or test your hockey skills at the Motor City Mechanics Tent with game tickets, merchandise, and a chance to get the players' autographs. See a large selection of workout equipment from the Fitness Experience. It's all under one roof at the Novi Expo Center during the Health and Fitness Show January 7th to the 9th, and admission is only $8.
Sponsored by Dr. Roche, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan, Henry Ford Medical Center, AAA Travel, the Fitness Experience, Master Spas, Michelob Ultra, and the Metal Lodge Group.
Right now is the right time to lease a 2005 Ford Explorer XLT during your Metro Detroit Ford dealer's Next Generation Sales Event, and get $1,000 in holiday bonus cash on the 2005 Explorer. Current AZD Plan lessees can lease a 2005 Explorer XLT 4x4 with a V6, automatic, air conditioning, CD player, trailer towing package, and more for only $157 a month for 24 months through Ford credit, with $2,177 due at signing, net of $4,250 customer and holiday bonus cash. This payment excludes title, taxes, and license fees, and includes a $500 renewal bonus if you currently lease a Ford Division product and take delivery by 1305. Some payments higher, some lower. Not all lessees will qualify. Residency restrictions apply. See dealer for details. Hurry. This $1,000 2005 Explorer Holiday Bonus Cash ends January 3rd. So get to your Metro Detroit Ford dealers during the Next Generation Sales Event.
This is NightCall. This is NightCall. The Risk Phone-In Talk Show. Now, here's Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome back. Man, everybody keeps dropping off. Have a little patience, folks. Stay on the line at 313-298-WRIF. I want to reset all this. I mean, what I was talking about, how much I dislike country music. So, yeah, it's all a matter of taste, although I think embedded in it is, like I say, this hokey self-congratulatory. We are the common people, you know, that kind of thing. All these guys with their hats, all hat, no cattle. So I don't like it very well, but that's my problem. And if you like it, I don't know. What do you say to country people? Rock out? I don't think so. Anyways, we were talking about this Shelley Wright song, Bumper of My SUV, about she says, yesterday a lady in a minivan held up a middle finger at me. Does she think she knows what I stand for or the things I believe just by looking at the sticker for the U.S. Marines on the bumper of my SUV? I mean, I could puke. I mean, for one thing, I said, maybe she was just driving bad. And I was saying that, I had a bumper sticker on my car for a long, long time that said, Bush lied, people died, and no one ever gave me any hassle about it. Could have just been like she was driving bad. And then at the end, no one's really commented on that. The end of her stupid song says, I hope that lady in her minivan turns on her radio and hears this from me as she picks up her kids from their private school. Now, by the way, who do you think would be more apt to be sending their kids to a private school? A random person in a minivan or Shelley Wright, a multimillionaire who's probably driving a Lincoln, what are those things called? I don't even know. A Lincoln, I don't know. What kind?
Continental.
No, not a Lincoln Continental. What are those big Lincoln SUVs?
Yeah,
obviously.
Is that what you're talking about?
I don't know. Who the hell cares? Dumbass cars. Anyways, I think. Sorry. If I'm stepping on your toes, I'm sorry. It's the spirit of the season. Oh, no, you're supposed to be nice. I forgot. My apologies. My unheartfelt apologies. Anyways, so I was just saying that this is nonsense. But I do remember I said that that one time some guy was actually chasing my wife down the street holding a sunroof, and he was holding a Bush sticker out of the sunroof. And he was just, and finally, like, pulled up to her and, you know, was, like, grinning and all that. And my wife put the mouth on him. Whoa, boy, she can talk bad. I said, well, you said that to this guy out in public? I said, what's the matter with you? You're going to get arrested. And she said, man, a nice, sweet lady. But anyway, how about you? Had anybody ever given you a hard time about your bumper sticker, whether you had, the only right-wing bumper stickers you ever see are Bush Cheney, but there's tons of left-wing bumper stickers. You know why that is? Because most of the message of the left is excluded from popular media. I mean, if you're a conservative, it's all just coming across. Fox and CNN and the nightly news and all that. I know. They say, what are you talking about? It's liberal. Come on. You don't get left messages. You got people on the CNN and all that posing as people on the left. We also were talking about Ted Nugent, about how he's moved to Crawford, Texas. I mean, he's always been, shell or two short of a full magazine. I say that because he's really into hunting. This is from Andy in Beverly Hills, writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. If you're listening across the world, this is Beverly Hills, Michigan, folks, not California. Peter, I love the show, and I appreciate you pointing out Ted Nugent's fascism is a little more overt than the crypto variety. But anyway, this is what he writes. But is his music any better than his politics? To quote from the December issue of Guitar Player, which ranked his Wango Tango solo as the seventh worst of all times, says, quote, the Motor City Madman has never been known for subtlety or inventiveness, but the main riff of this song is so brain dead, it cries out for euthanasia. Well, I mean, see, that's the problem. I don't ever read music reviews. I mean, I hear that. And it does nothing to me. I mean, a lot of people don't like Nugent because he's just this, wacko right winger. But I listen to his songs. You like them or you don't like them. And most of his, I mean, I would call his Ted Nugent style of guitar playing what explosive. So it's not subtle. It's not maybe even particularly inventive. It's just that what came out of the Motor City in the late 60s when he was with groups like the Amboy Dukes. Okay, but I don't know. I don't know where this is all going. Let's just give you a shot at it. 313-298-WRIF. People say I'm always pushing my website. Oh yeah, go to my website, peterwerbe.com. PeterWerbe.com. And if you go to where it says holiday, what did it say? Happy holidays, right? I put that up there just to kind of, you know, peel people a little. Happy holidays. And if you click on that, it's got this animated skit from Saturday Night Live that really cheesed all these right-wingers, because it shows Rush Limbaugh overdosing on painkillers, laying in a pile of puke. I don't know why I'm being like this tonight. All right. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hello?
Hello, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I just came to call in about your bumper sticker thing.
Yeah.
What's surprising about it is, I mean, I had a carry bumper sticker on the back of my car, and that's all I would ever get were middle fingers and F you, you know, like stuff like that. And I never understood it. Because,
where are you from? Where do you drive?
Oh, I drive around Westland, Michigan.
Yeah.
I mean, that's And I just, I don't understand, because I've never heard of anybody with a carry sticker, you know, getting mad at someone with a bush.
Yeah, I'll bet you someone will call in and say it. But you know what? Yeah, most of the hostility, I mean, there's a high level of rage among Bush people and conservatives in general. I mean, they talk about love and all that, but there are some angry folks. And what the hell they're angry about? Well, I mean, they got some things to be angry about, except they never put it in the right place, because they're so afraid of people in authority. So they would never dare challenge people in authority. They challenge people that they consider below them or weaker or what have you. It's a characteristic of the authoritarian personality. But Westland, I never saw the voting statistics. Do you remember what? Do you have any idea how Westland voted?
No. I know I should, but I don't.
Well, I mean, it really took me some digging. But, I mean, fortunately, I live, fortunately for that kind of thing, I live around, the sort of the, you know, Ferndale, Royal Oak corridor. And that, you know, we all overwhelmingly voted for Kerry. And, you know,
yeah.
So.
Around Westland, everyone I know that voted for Kerry. I know like three people that voted for Bush.
Well, they should. I mean, it's a working-class suburb, and working-class people that vote for rich conservatives that are going to take even more money away from the middle class and working class are a bunch of lunkheads. So, that said, moving on. Thank you. Appreciate your call. Todd writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com, because I said I was being a little too harsh on all country music, because there's all these people that people, again, reminding me I liked, or the styles of music that they had country influence. Todd writes, I'm not sure if you know this, but Johnny Cash is the only person that has been inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You know, I think I do remember that. Or maybe I'm just not willing to admit I didn't. Where are we going? Mr. Rough Dizzy. Right here. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
My name's Jim. I'm calling in about your Country Music Association thing there going on. Just the way the artists come out, as far as you saying self-congratulatory and all this. I work for a local record chain that was in business for like 50 years. I'm sure you know who they are. They're the biggest one for years around here, and then went down a few years ago.
Uh-huh.
But I got to meet a lot of artists in my time at that company, in heavy metal, rap, everything. But the country artists were always the most plastic, manufactured, I think, as far as the modern time country.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you think of country music, you got to think of people like you said, Johnny Cash, Merle Haggard, Patsy Cline. That's true country. But the people around now, it's kind of pop country. It's not the same.
Yeah, it is. In fact, they call it modern country frequently. So, I mean, it's just a style.
Yeah, it's not like country music was for years and years that we all know country music to really be. I mean,
yeah.
Just, and those people were always the most distant from you when you would meet them in person. It was just, I kind of have a theory that Garth Brooks kind of changed that whole thing when he got really big, and then they started just manufacturing these artists like boy bands kind of.
I was watching, I don't know, some country music awards show just a little bit back with, it was hosted by Dolly Parton, and these guys all come out, and they got these hats on. You couldn't see any of their eyes.
Right.
I'm saying, what is up with this? All right, thank you very much.
Okay, Peter.
Appreciate your call. Thanks for calling in. See, this is why did I even read that thing about Ted Nugent? Thank you, Ralph. Brian writes in. He's all PO'd because the guy criticized Nugent. To the brain-dead emailer, Nugent's solo in Stranglehold was one of the top 10 solos of all time, according to Guitar Magazine. You can't be the best every time. Nugent moved to his ranch... wow. Nugent moved because his ranch was overcome by black mold and was literally removed. Well, that's... That's pretty weird. That's what I'm saying. I mean, actually, Stranglehold's a great rock and roll song. And when I started hearing, a lot of it is the politics. When I started, almost every time I hear a Nugent song, I just think of the legions of stupid right-wing things that he said, and what an overbearing character when anyone tries to, when he's had, like, political stuff. And then I think, you know, listen to the music. You know, who knows? When I listen to jazz or, you know, other... you figure most rockers are to the left. I mean, if we saw all how they lined up for for Kerry, but who knows? I said I'm listening to jazz. I'm listening to opera and symphonic music. Who knows what those guys are? So who knows what politics Mozart had? So Nugent had a great solo on Stranglehold, I would agree. Nugent moved because his ranch was overcome by black mold. Well, that could be true, Brian, but of all the places in the world, he moves to Crawford, Texas? It's a little strange. I mean, it's not the most hospitable land around. Rizpa writes in. Oh, it's a Lincoln Navigator. That's right. That's that big old clunky. You know, these things, my wife, who can, you know, lay a foul mouth on anybody that messes with her, including, once in a while, guess who? She calls SUVs laundry trucks. And she said, why do these people want to drive these laundry trucks? Megan, love your show. Look forward to every weekend, says Rizpa. I also hear people saying things about supporting the troops, but the fact is that if you're against the war, you are still supporting the troops. The civilian president and Congress are the ones who decide to go to war, not the military troops. That's right. You know, the troops have absolutely nothing to do about it, with it. I mean, the troops aren't getting enough support from the government. They're not getting the right armor. They're being thrown into what New York Times columnist Bob Herbert called a fool's errand, all of that. But this is about a political military decision carried out by Bush Incorporated, right? Troops just carry out the orders. They don't get to decide when and where to go to war. I support the troops and am against the war. You know what? I never did say about where our money goes, did I? That reminds me. This was a lot of big news. You maybe saw this. Contrac, like not with a T, but Contrack International, which this week became the first major American company to withdraw from Iraq reconstruction work because of violence, was awarded a $64 million Army construction contract in Afghanistan. So it pulled out of a $325 million Iraq job, and the American officials agreed. Because they just couldn't be, they couldn't do it under the security circumstances. And it had been overseeing a consortium rebuilding roads, bridges, railways, and airports. So what they're going to do in Afghanistan, this is our money, folks. Yours and mine and your parents and if you're like in high school or something. And instead of creating situations for our students where there's maybe 15 kids in a class, now there's 30, 35, they're laying off all these teachers, where we should be having free university tuition so everybody can get a college education, $64 million is going to build, design and construct regional brigade facilities for the Afghan army. No, I didn't misread this. I didn't say the U.S. Army. We're taking our tax dollars, and instead of sending them where they should go, right here in the United States, right here, because we're paying them, we're the United States citizens, right here in Michigan, because this is where we're broadcasting from, it's going to design and construct regional brigade facilities for the Afghan army. Now, what is this contract of $325 million? What's that going for? Overseeing a consortium rebuilding roads, bridges, railways, and airports. Well, for one thing, we need roads, bridges, railways, and airports rebuilt quite a bit as well. Okay? Except theirs are in worse shape. Why is that? Because we also spent hundreds of millions, probably billions of dollars, destroying their roads, bridges, railways, and airports. So that's, you know, this is kind of one of my refrains. I'm sorry if you've heard it before, but it's really important to view Bush Co., Bush Company, Bush Incorporated, not as a government, but as a racket. So it takes our, and this is a wealth transfer. This, these conservatives, these right-wingers are always saying, socialism, you're taking the money from the people that earn it. And, you know, well, here's the way it goes. We work or your parents work, and then this section of the money is involuntarily taken from us as taxes. And that's what governments do, because they have to operate and they got to do stuff like roads, bridges, railways, and airports. Here, in the old U.S. of A., in Michigan, in the Detroit area. Instead, what is happening, Bush's pals, and in one case, Bush's father, their companies destroy Iraq. So we spend billions of dollars doing that, and then we're also giving billions of dollars to rebuild the destruction that we already paid for. So it's a racket. It ain't a government. It's a racket.
This is the Riffs Award-winning Night Call with Peter Werby. You can call in at 313-298-WRIF. Peter will return with more of your calls in just a moment.
So it's going to be a brand new year. Are things still going to be as sweet as they have been?
I tell you what, that's a good question. I'm glad you asked me, because 2005, it certainly looks like that we're going to see a little move up in the interest rates. I don't think it's going to be severe, but I think we're going to see rates go up, and that's why I've been advising folks to act now, because 2005 most likely will be a higher interest rate environment than 2004.
How do you want them to act, though? Act now to do what?
Well, take a look at your mortgage. That's a great question. If you have a current mortgage, you just want to look at it and talk to mortgage experts. Hey, am I in the right program? Because here's what my life looks like going forward. If you're only going to be there 3 years or 5 years or 7 years or forever, it means you should be in a different mortgage. You shouldn't be in the same mortgage as your neighbor, because your circumstances are probably different. I think the key is, if you're renting, you want to build a plan to figure out how you can own in 2005. We can help you with that.
Yeah, get in before the getting is no longer so good. Huh?
That's right. And housing is great right now. It's a great time to purchase.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, okay. And the mortgage experts don't mind if we just call out of the blue to ask how things are?
And anytime, anywhere, evenings and weekends and randomly. That's what we always say.
I should have known that. Okay, so call the mortgage experts at 800-333-ROCK or visit them online at rockfinancial.com for all your answers.
Quicken Loans Company.
Equal housing lender.
800-333-ROCK. Hey, happy holidays.
Wow.
Thank you.
Another chilling episode from Stolichnaya, where we witnessed the extreme lengths people will go to enjoy Stoli, ice cold, like riding in the back of a refrigerated truck.
Whoa, stop!
Easy there, buddy.
Stop!
You guys need a lift?
Oh, yeah, we need the space. In the back of your freezer trailer? Are you, like, going around the city?
Yeah.
We'd kind of like to hang out in your truck while you do your rounds.
Yeah. Are you guys all right?
Yeah, you know, it's just going to be like us, you ladies.
Hopefully.
Raska's got his dog. You know, there's not going to be more than 50, 60 of us. 100 tops. There's going to be some music, maybe a band.
Are you guys crazy? It's 30 degrees back there.
No, no. Yeah, yeah, that's perfect. We're having a Stoli party.
Oh, go ahead. Hop in.
You're like the 20th truck we stopped.
Please remember that riding in the back of a refrigerated truck is but one of the many ways to enjoy Stolichnaya ice cold. Stoli, best chilled. Drink responsibly. Stolichnaya Russian vodka, 100% grain neutral spirits, 40% alcohol by volume. Allied to Mex Spirits USA, Westport, Connecticut.
Lunchtime isn't supposed to be like this.
Can I help you?
Yeah, hi, I'd like to get the cheeseburger meal with a Coke and onion rings. No, I don't want to upsize.
But you care for a kid's toy?
No, I don't want the kid's toy.
No, I don't want a fruit cup.
No, I don't want a fruit cup.
Would you like a jerry can?
cheeseburger?
No, no cherry cobbler, just the cheeseburger meal, please.
I didn't hear that.
No, no, I just want what I ordered, please.
No, lunchtime is your time to relax, decompress, and forget about work for a while. Now, Players is your lunchtime headquarters. Come as you are to Players. There's no hassles, no hurry, and no shirt and tie required. Blue collar, white collar, everybody's welcome. Players offers you the Motor City's best menu for lunch with way better prices than you'd expect, along with daily lunch specials. Open for lunch at 11:30. Metro Detroit's finest chefs are at Players, so get rid of that brown bag and stay out of the drive-thru line. Midday sports, the news channels, Players has TV screens everywhere you look. What a concept. A laid-back atmosphere where you can relax and enjoy lunch. And the gorgeous ladies of Players are a lot nicer to look at than that annoying drive-thru menu. Chill out with the gorgeous ladies of Players and order up some awesome food from Players' full menu. Players, the ultimate gentleman's entertainment club and your best place for lunch. Players on 8 Mile Road, just one block east of Shaner. For more info, call Players at 313-371-6970.
Stick around. More Night Call with Peter Werby. Coming up next.
Hey, it's Meltdown. I'm live with my buddy Karen Newman. What's up, Karen?
Hey, Meltdown. It's holiday time. And you know what? We need to let your listeners know about Joe Pannion Chevrolet's unbeatable year-end red tag sale.
That's right. Hundreds of vehicles, over 9 acres, all red tagged with unbeatable prices. Like right now, GMS employees can lease a 2005 Impala for 24 months for $118 a month with $1,600 due at signing.
Only $118 a month? Wow. Well, it's the best time to get a new Chevrolet from the dealer that's going to take the best care of you, Joe Pannion Chevrolet.
And then, of course, people can roll to your holiday show December 23rd at the Blue Martini in style. Right, Karen?
That's right. I'll be taking my Suburban to the Blue Martini in Birmingham that night.
Now, do I need to go to KarenNewman.com to get my tickets to the show?
Well, you can do that, or you can call the Blue Martini at 248-258-3005. But Meltdown, I'll probably slip you in.
All right, I think I'll owe you one for that one.
Okay.
Excellent. Call Joe Pannion today at 866-JOE-1111 for details on the $118 a month Impala. Joe Pannion Chevrolet, right where 696 meets Telegraph. Chevrolet, an American revolution.
A few words about limits from Diet Sprite Zero. Life begins without limits. We're all going to be astronauts and cowboys. But limits, like lint, gathers in the pockets of life's little cardigan, and soon we realize we are not going to get the pony. Given this hostile landscape, one must limit limitation where one can. Hence, Diet Sprite Zero. The great taste of Diet Sprite with zero carbs, zero calories, zero sugar, zero limits. Because that part of you that screams, I want a pony is not going to go away. So give it something it will like. Diet Sprite Zero.
It's almost time for the holidays and all those festive parties, and nothing goes better with great food and great friends than icy cold Diet Sprite Zero. Whether you need 2-liter bottles for the party or fridge pack packages to keep the family refreshed, Coca-Cola has exactly what you need. Look for great tasting Diet Sprite Zero in stores near you and stock up for the holidays.
Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Now, more of your comments, questions, and opinions with your host, Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. It's midnight in Detroit, and welcome to all of you listening around the world on the World Wide Web. And, of course, our core audience here in Detroit. Now, what you're supposed to do, I actually, when I worked for this network a few years ago, they brought in a consultant, and they said, one thing you have to do when you come back from commercials, you always have to reset what you're talking about. Because if I just, some of you probably just joined me are thinking, who's this guy? Just turn, tune by. So, I don't know if I can do it. What we started off talking about was Shelley Wright's song, Bumper, what's it, what's the whole name of it here? The Bumper of My SUV, where she has a Marine sticker on. She says she did it because a lady in a minivan held up a middle finger at me. And I was saying, how does she know that's why that she got the finger? Maybe it was because she was driving badly or poorly or something like that. And I was saying, what kind of experiences have other people had with having bumper stickers on their cars? And at the end of this stupid song, Shelley Wright says that as she picks up her kids from their private school. Now, here's this millionaire country singer, all hat, no cattle, right, singing about, why does she make this assumption? I mean, this is so over the edge. Anyways, it turned out, too, is that Shelley Wright's fan club, headed by her pal, a longtime pal, they had the fan club calling stations, country stations, and saying, we're military families. My son is in the Marines, and he wants to hear Shelley's song. It's on my SUV. Then I went off on this needless and probably inappropriate tirade against country music. People reminded me, though, country music is pretty broad, so maybe we shouldn't even do that. Let's see. Opera Dave writes in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I think the important thing to remember when discussing Shelley Wright, Toby Keith, and the Dixie Chicks is that music has always been a platform for social commentary criticism. Well, that's true. It's true about opera. In fact, he says, when Verdi penned the score for Rigoletto, the censors tore it to shreds. To bring the opera to the stage, he had to reduce a horribly licentious king to a mere duke. And I saw Rigoletto, a fine performance down at the Detroit Opera House. At least in this day and age, people have the ability to make music relevant to the times and the issues of the moment. Each week you bring us great music from the left, the right deserves their due. Well, there's not, but Opera Dave, there's hardly any right-wing music. Whether, except for country music. When we agree with the music's message or not, we should applaud the fact that we can choose to listen to it. As for right-wing country, I say turn the dial. It's just too bad Detroit it's just too bad that Detroit doesn't have more classical music radio. Yeah, well, that's true, too. You know, the thing I didn't finish with, by the way, I was raving before the break about where our money's going to this racket called the Bush government, Bush regime, that spends money, our money, which should be going here, destroying Iraq, and then has the other half of the racket spend these hundreds of millions to rebuild it. In Eminem's Mosh, the song from his latest album, oh, I can't remember the line. What does he say? No war for oil. We've got our problems here on our own soil. That's right. But so I was going to tell you where the money's going. But where is the money not going besides that? Listen to this. So there's hundreds of millions that are going to rebuild things in Afghanistan and in Iraq, but up to 90,000 students to lose college aid in surprise move. Well, guess who's bringing about the surprise? Well, it's old. Those rich guys running our government. The Department of Education announced a new formula for recalculating eligibility for college financial aid, a move that will eliminate federal Pell Grant scholarships for an estimated 80 to 90,000 low-income students. Screw the poor! This is all done for the rich, right? And what Bushco wanted to see, could they give this enormous transfer of wealth from the middle and the working class, and even the poor, low income, to the wealthy class, the real base. You remember in Fahrenheit 9/11, he said some people, what it was, I can't remember the line now. He's talking to all these rich people, and he's saying, some people call you the elite, I call you my base. And they all laugh. You know, these rich SOBs do. Mm. Anyways, so that's where the money should be going. That's where it's not. At 1 a.m. Eastern Time, we'll be hearing from Huwaida Araf, who is a Palestinian-American from Detroit, and Adam Shapiro, a Jewish-American, her husband from New York. They're going to talk about their experiences in the Palestine-Israel region. And at 1:30, sickness and wealth. Again, how does this disproportionate maldistribution of income throughout the world translate into illness? I got a bunch of other stuff. This phone-in show. Let's do that. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air.
Hello, Peter. This is Maurice. How you doing, man?
Hi, Maurice.
Listeners, I was going to ask you something else, but I changed my mind. What you were saying about Bush Coal, I believe they have to do that in order to get revenue to run this country. Look at all the jobs that are leaving the country.
They got to do what?
They have to go over there, use our money to the best in a legal war for the private sector to go over there and make money.
Yeah, it does. I mean, obviously, there are people being employed, and there are jobs that are making all the weaponry that destroys stuff, and Caterpillar sends its stuff over there. So, I mean, it's not like it's going down the drain. But ultimately, we're paying for that, and we lose that. But, at best, we're employing other people with that third of our income that's taken in taxes. But at worst, it's going into the corporations that are benefiting from this reconstruction.
Hey, Peter, what I think about is like the war on drugs, but larger.
You with me?
Hello?
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's like the war on drugs, but a larger scale.
Yeah.
Oh. Like Homeland Security, how many big jobs that made? It's like you're creating another industry. Just like holidays. Holidays are like they're created for people to, you know, spend money on, for companies to make money.
Maurice, are you saying this is all a scam?
Yeah. Look at all the jobs. Hey, look. You got somebody over in India doing a job for $15,000 to $20,000. Somebody over here was making $100,000. So what's up with that?
Yeah, well, it is a scam, and as long as we just sit there, they're going to see how deep can they insert the needle. You know.
Peter, got a question. There's one thing I want to know. Why didn't the people was having a problem with Saddam Hussein? Why did the people of Iraq petition the UN for help to get Saddam Hussein out of power? So if it's their country, who are we to go over to somebody else's country and just tell the man, well, you out of office, you out of your job?
Well, you got a point. What are we doing there? Maurice, thanks for joining me on Night Call. 313-298-WRIF is our phone call. People calling in waves, dropping off like flies. Should I refer to my callers as flies? If you drop off, yeah. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Happy holidays from Watts, Peter.
Well, Watts, I haven't talked to you in years. I mean, we're talking about old school, Maurice,
right.
Then you. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Three artists that are country, or at least a lot of country into them, that are different than your typical country person is Neil Young.
Sure.
Steve Earle, especially, he came from country. And have you heard his new album? It's really
the The Revolution Starts Now?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Well, there goes my argument. You remember, there's an old Monty Python routine. As soon as the other person says something, they say, well, there goes my argument. I was hoping you wouldn't bring that up.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. You're right.
And especially, too, the great underrated triple threat talent, great songwriter, lead vocalist, and guitarist is the underrated John Fogerty, formerly of Creedence Clearwater Revival. He's got a new album, Deja Vu, all over again. Have you heard that?
I've heard some of it, yeah, and I was thinking about some of the solo work that he did that had this decided country flavor, and actually a lot of it with a pretty left message to it.
Yeah, definitely, and that Deja Vu, all over again, the title song, he doesn't come out and say it, but you know what he's talking about. I've seen it all before, and can't they read the writing on the wall? It's very clever, and I hope you'll play it sometime. You know, it would be great for your show.
I'll get it.
Okay.
Good hearing from you, Watts.
Well, thanks very much.
Welcome back. It's like old home week on Night Call. Chad in Ann Arbor writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Peter, I'm asking you to mention to your listeners about a grassroots, University of Michigan student group who is organizing for thousands of Michigan residents to attend the GW inauguration on January 20th. They can get all the info at umjan20.org. So that's umjan, like in January, 20.org, umjan20.org. It has the city stirring. Well, great. Yeah, I don't know why you get this stuff over the corporate media that says there's not going to be any protests on January 20th. Well, go to my website, peterwerbe.com, I can't spell my own name tonight, W-E-R-B-E.com, and you'll get an idea of what is going on. In fact, let me see, what do you click on? It says, it's right at the top. Ed from Warren writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. When I had a carry sticker on my car, I got a graphic abortion is wrong pamphlet on my windshield. When I saw the Bush-Cheney car next to me, I felt like slashing his tires. Then I remembered that Democrats don't resort to dirty methods like Republicans do. I didn't want to sink to that level. Well, you don't know that he did it. I came out of a restaurant in Royal Oak, and someone had put a W sticker on my car. I took it off. Let's go on. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hello.
Hello.
No warning.
Did you say...
I was calling to talk about...
Wait, did you say good morning or no warning?
No warning.
Oh, okay. You're on the air. You're on the air.
I'm on the air.
Yeah.
I have a bunch of bumper stickers on my car. I have a peace sign, a yin and yang.
I have a bumper sticker that says Congress gave away billions in tax cuts, and all I got was a lousy bumper sticker.
Yeah.
Officer, fasten your seatbelts. It makes it harder for the aliens to suck you out of your car.
What? Do you have all these on your car? Whatever I
say. And I have a Teamsters for Carry bumper sticker.
You're a Teamster?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
And I came out one day and I looked at my Teamsters for Carry sticker and found out somebody had slashed it.
Yeah, actually, somebody...
Three pieces.
Now that I remember, I said no one ever said anything. Someone had taken a ballpoint pen and written, kind of like make marks all over my Bush lied, people died bumper sticker, but it didn't do any real damage. I mean, if you looked at it real closely, you could see that there were pen lines on it.
Yeah, well, all I know is the only sticker I've ever had that was slashed was my Teamsters for Carry, and I don't know whether they were angry at the Teamsters or they were angry at Carry, but they were angry at someone.
Huh. Yeah. They ought to get angry at who's really doing them wrong. But like I say, they usually don't have the guts. I mean, a lot of times they come on real tough, but ultimately the task is to be tough at the people above you in the social strata, and they don't have the guts for that. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Let's see here. What do you think about, what do you know about California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger approving a bill taking away a worker's right to a lunch break after working 5 hours? A company does not have to guarantee a lunch break in California, according to NPR News. What else will the Republicans take from us? Well, there is this austerity going on all across the world, and wages are dropping worldwide. And what it's called is the rich get richer, and then this includes the middle class as well. The poor get poor. And they see what they can do. They see, do we stand up to them? And we don't stand up to them, so they say, well, let's take more. It's like a bully in the lunchroom. Give me a quarter. Okay. Well, there you go. You lost your quarter. And it's not even a matter of that. I mean, because sometimes it's hard to stand up to a bully if you're just an individual. But there's... You know, we outnumber them 100-1. There's an old what song is that? There's blood in the streets of New Haven. Yeah, it's an old Doors song. 5-1. Yeah, they got the guns, but we got the numbers. That's right. All right, it's not even coming to that. It's not even coming to that. Where are we going, Mr. Roth Dizzy? Thank you very much. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening. Hello, hello.
Hello.
Yes, hi. You're on the air.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I want to challenge some of your ideas. It seems kind of like you're focusing on pointing the finger at the man. I'm going into the Army myself, and I think the reason all this stuff's going on is just because, you know, we're trying to help someone else gain freedom, you know, that we have here in America.
Why do you believe that?
Because
what gives you the slightest idea that that could be a possible explanation as to why we went over there?
Well, look at it. Why would we be over there? We have the resources to get the oil. We have the reserves to last 15 years.
No, there's lots of things going on. I mean, there's the fear that Saudi Arabia is so unstable that could lose its position as both a military outpost and also is sitting on top of all these reserves. I mean, there were no weapons of mass destruction. Bush made this up. I mean, nobody seriously before it, other than the general population who believed what they heard on the news, knew it was there. So no one said anything about democracy. What they said is that we had to remove Saddam Hussein because we could, have mushroom clouds, and they were going to bomb us, and they had all these weapons ready to go in 45 minutes. So now, suddenly, we've decided that we are going to shove democracy, Western style, down their throat, whether they want it or not. Right?
Well, obviously, there's another reason, you know. You look at all the terrorist attacks on America.
Well, but Iraq didn't have anything to do with it. And what is happening now, this is creating this basis for terrorism, this hatred for the United States. The people who have had their homes destroyed in Fallujah, that devastated, that city's been devastated like no city has since the Vietnam War, that is now filled with hundreds of thousands of people that are burning with hatred for these occupiers and these invaders that come from places like Michigan. Why in the world would you want to go over there? Why would you want to risk your neck? Why would you want to kill other people for this?
You didn't let me finish what I was trying to say.
Well, I didn't. You're right. Go ahead.
Yeah. You know, it's a lot easier for terrorists to fight us across seas, you know, when we're closer to their own borders. You know, they don't. You know, they have the resources, but they don't have the resources to send that many people over to America to kill Americans. They just want to kill us, period.
You know, they don't want to kill us, period. I mean, listen to this man responsible for September 11th. What did he say his reasons are? What does he want from the United States? Does he want to destroy the United States?
Pretty much.
What gives you that idea? Where did you ever hear that? What he said is the United States has to get out of the Middle East. It has to stop supplying Israel with billions of dollars of war material to repress and suppress the Palestinians. That it has to get troops out of their holy land, Saudi Arabia, and it has to stop supporting this brutal monarchy that has no democracy whatsoever of Saudi Arabia.
So are you agreeing with Osama there?
Well, you know what? He said, you know, don't mess with us and we won't mess with you. And we've been over in, the United States. The United States government has been intervening in that area to the disadvantage of the Arab people for the last 50 years and the West for the last 80 or 90 years. And I'll tell you, people don't like that. The reason they came over, and they say that, the reason they came over here is because we came over there. We just experienced for our troops, people like you, young men and young women, and some not so young, just got bombed in Mosul. And that's exactly what happens when their cities get bombed. The same kind of flesh tears, the same kind of deaths occur, although mostly what gets killed over there on the Iraqi side are civilians.
Well, you know, you're basing all this off what, CNN?
Am I basing this on CNN?
Yeah.
No, I never watch television. Why would you say that? What would you base it on? Fox News? What do you know what we call it here? Foxhole News. They're the ones that want to encourage you to go on while they root for you from the sidelines, and you make great human interest stories. In the meantime, we've lost probably 1,350 of men like you, men and women, and 10,000 men with hideous injuries. For what? And this is all to bring democracy to Iraq? Well, isn't that sweet of us? I don't want to lose you, and I'm sometimes near to tears when I think what we've lost already, and B, what we've done in Iraq.
Well, I don't know. You know, as a soldier, your job is to fight. Your job is to serve your country and die for your country if that need be. And you know, I think everybody in America is kind of like, you know, the people like, you know, not for, no offense, but people kind of like you who are sitting back here saying, you know, oh, anti-war. That does nothing but hurt the soldiers. You know, people, they don't want to support it. They don't want to send the funds to the government. They don't want to send the funds where they need to be. And that does nothing but ends up hurting the soldiers themselves.
Well, listen, I didn't send anybody over there. I'm not Donald Rumsfeld that essentially told you that your comrades, that if you don't have armor, just too bad. I mean, this is a guy that owns 8 houses in northern New Mexico. He's this rich guy sending average middle class and working class kids out to do his bidding, all of which he lied to the American people about as for the original reason to go in, that there were weapons of mass destruction, that Saddam Hussein represented a threat to the region and a threat directly to the United States, all which was absolutely untrue. I mean, how many lives, including yours, are we as a nation and as a community? You're too valuable to go over there and do what you're probably going to have to do.
You know, I honestly care more about, you know, other people gaining freedom. You know, half the people over there are very happy we are there, more than half. You know, it's just that select few that do not like us.
What gives you that idea? I mean, where do you get this stuff from? I mean, there is a mass uprising against the United States. The people that are the government are these people whose salaries we pay. Our tax dollars go to pay every one of those people that are there. Do you think that half the people of Fallujah, or just it's a minority of Fallujah or Mosul or any of these other places that have suffered thousands of casualties that have? I mean, do you ever see these shots of American armed forces smashing through doors and stuff like that? Do you think those people think, oh yeah, I'm just sure glad they're here? You know, hey, you're from Michigan. That's 6,000 miles away. What would you think if there was an Arab army in this country going through Roseville and Oak Park and Southfield, knocking down doors, having jet planes bombing neighborhoods? You think you'd say, oh, well, good, they're bringing us freedom.
Well, if we came from another government like that, I would.
Well, I don't think so. I think the people they're completely capable of solving their own problems, and if they're not capable of it, that's their problem. We've wasted our fortune. We've wasted thousands of lives, both American and Iraqis, and the United States is probably going to have to leave in the same manner that it did in Vietnam.
I think it's pretty outrageous right there. You know, people, you know, we don't exactly advertise, you know, the differences in death tolls. I'm not saying it's a good thing, but it's like, if you look at it, it's a lot different than Vietnam. Statistically, ever since the Gulf War, whenever America's been at war, it's been safer for troops to be at war than at home. We've lost less lives due to just other various causes of death. I mean, if you look at car accidents a day, you know, how many people die because of those? You know, it's a big number. And so it's really, like, as far as, like, people, you know, people just look at it because it's, you know, death by, you know, weaponry.
Yeah. What about the 10,000 severely injured soldiers?
You know, I'm going into the Army, and I accept that as part of my job. You know, that's just the way it is.
Well, you're supposed to protect the United States of America, not when the government, when these guys that all of them, every single one of them in the Bush administration, who could have fought in Vietnam but scammed out of it, were all used every ruse from being rich kids to jillions of phony excuses like Rush Limbaugh said he had bad knees and, you know, all this stuff like this. These are the people that are sending troops over there. I don't know. You know what?
Well, you say, you know, Bush scammed out. He was a Air National Guard. He had his training to do. You can't exactly be fighting and training at the same time.
Well, he got in there because his dad was wealthy. I mean, that's pretty well established. That's how people got out of one of the many ways that people got out of the draft. Very few middle-class people fought in that war, and next to no rich people fought. And it's the same thing now. That's what they always say. It's a rich man's war and a poor man's fight.
Well, yeah, I don't consider myself poor, and I'm still joining the Army. It's just, you know, I'm also, you know, going to study political science, and I'm doing, you know, all this stuff, and I agree with it. I see the point. We're protecting America's interest. We have a lot of interests over there, like not just oil, not just, you know, safety. You know, we don't even know about the mass destruction. We found the grenades that were outlawed, gas grenades. He had them. And that's not a mass destruction, but that's still, he's breaking the code. So who's to say he doesn't have that stuff buried? It's a big country. It's like the size of California.
No one seriously suspects that there's buried weapons. Saddam Hussein had a ghost army, had no weapons whatsoever. Anybody that really looked at it seriously knew it. Bush invaded because before the UN could vote, and because he knew that the UN inspectors would find absolutely nothing, because he knew there was absolutely nothing. It's a war based on lies. This country has been destroyed. 100,000 Iraqi civilians have already died. 1,350 of our casualties are over 10,000. How many, in order to bring democracy there, how many people are you willing to lose?
Well, it's not a question of how many I'm willing to lose.
Yeah, it is.
How is that a question of how many I'm willing to lose?
Well, as a citizen of the United States, not just somebody going in. I don't want to lose another single person. I don't want the United States Armed Forces to kill another Iraqi, and I don't want to have another American soldier injured. I want it to stop tomorrow. And if we leave and a civil war breaks out, well, I guess we'll bear some responsibility for that. But in order to pacify these cities, Rumsfeld has already said there's going to have to be another 14 or 15 Fallujahs. That means destroying modern cities because there's insurgents there. These are Iraqis who don't want you there. Don't you think they have some validity that they live there and you live in the Detroit area?
You know, it's, you know, like I say, it's the percent thing. It comes down to how many of them want us there, how many of them don't. The ones that are happy are the ones, obviously, that aren't in targets, you know, aren't like in the path of, you know, our army. But we give them as many chances to leave as we can within reason. You know, it's, war is terrible. Nobody wants war. Nobody wants anyone to die. That stuff happens. Well, it's war.
Yeah, the reason for, in you see, every move in Iraq is based on a lie. The invasion of Fallujah was because this I can't even think of the guy's name, al-Zakari, was supposed to be headquartered there. The elders of the city and the city leaders said, he's not here. He doesn't exist here. He's not here at all. The United States command said, we don't believe you. And, I mean, I don't think they thought he was there. In fact, he wasn't there. It turned out that, that in fact, they were correct. Instead, this whole city was destroyed. Of course, now we're going to have to spend hundreds of millions of dollars to rebuild it. I mean, we probably do have some obligation to do that. Do me a favor. I'm just going to wish you a safe passage there and back. And give me your last thought, and then I got to do a commercial break.
Okay. Well, good night.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Good night.
You're listening to WRIF.com. At Treetops, you'll find the space to breathe. Whether your idea of relaxation involves a snowboard and half pipe, a horse-drawn sleigh, or a deep tissue massage, Treetops Resort is your destination of choice. Come and hit Treetops Slopes, which offer 23 trails and a tubing run, or sit by the fire in Treetops' newly renovated lodge. You can always breathe deeply and find a way to alleviate stress in Treetops Spa. Wrap it up with a stay in one of Treetops' 252 luxurious rooms, including 2 and 3 bedroom condominiums with all the amenities. Treetops is inviting WRIF listeners to enjoy their magnificent facilities with their stay and ski package for just $99 per person per night. Rates are subject to availability. Package includes one night's lodging, full day lift ticket, and complimentary arrival ticket for up to 6 people. Based on double occupancy, requires 2-night minimum stay on certain weekends. Treetops is home to the finest winter recreation facilities in northern Michigan. What are you waiting for? Call Treetops Reservations Line at 1-888-TREETOPS and ask for the WRIF Stay and Ski Special. There are so many choices in mortgages these days. For the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance, searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 1-800-784-4761, extension 8888. That's Financial Independence Mortgage, 1-800-784-4761, extension 8888.
Time is running out. Time is running out on the best deal ever on your opportunity to make an investment that can help you make more money, that will change your life forever. Time is running out on your chance to register for Oakland Community College's winter 2005 semester. Final walk-in registration for winter classes is January 5th, 6th, and 7th. OCC offers thousands of day, night, and weekend classes in literally hundreds of subjects like business, psychology, computer information systems, physics, English, pre-engineering, robotics, and more. If you want to take a giant step to a better life, Oakland Community College is your educational answer. Call 248-341-2340 or visit the website at oaklandcc.edu. Walk-in registration is January 5th, 6th, and 7th at all OCC campuses. Oakland Community College. Get anywhere from here.
Classes begin January 10th. You're listening to WRIF.com.
Hello.
How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
It was an unexpected review of the 3 messages I left on Drew's voicemail during the final minutes in regulation of the Michigan-Michigan State game.
Hey, Drew, it's Mike. It's 11 minutes left in the fourth, and MSU up 20-10. Could this be it, or could somehow Michigan pull it out in the end against all odds? I don't think so.
October 30th.
Drew, Mike, it is over, my man. Oh, my God, we just ran one all the way in. Whoa, this is unbelievable. There's something like 8 minutes left in the game, I think. I'm going to be a fool and declare it over. 27-10 with 8:43 left in the fourth. This has got to be certain victory.
Revis kicks it, tries to get the big hop. It's free!
puts it up. Edwards for the tying touchdown. He goes up.
Saturday, October 30th.
Well, Drew, look how fast it turned around. Michigan does the usual thing and pulls away from behind. Who would have thought the Spartans would completely, totally, and thoroughly come unglued? You know what? I don't think I'm ever going to support them again, ever. I'm sick and tired of being disappointed. There comes a point where, you know, you support a team until it reaches a point where you're a fool to support them any longer.
Drew and Mike in the morning. Broadcast program.
On the Riff.
A block down. Let's see. Rob writes in to calltalks@yahoo.com. With all due respect, just how much money above and beyond the norm did Clinton spend on our infrastructure? I don't know. The funds were abundant, according to the Dems in the 90s, so why isn't it all allocated accordingly? It 8 years to do it, blah, blah, blah. Both of our parties ought to get kicked to Siberia. Whether it's a Democrat or Republican in office, neither one manages to come up with the funds to take care of business in this country. Somehow they always find a way to help the rest of the world. Have a great evening. Well, they don't, really. I mean, this is this myth. I mean, for one thing, I'm not a Democrat, so I'm not defending Clinton in any regard. But it's worse. It is. It used to be a long time ago. You could say, "Oh, they're completely the same." But the Bushco has turned into just such an absolute racket that there really is a difference. I don't know if I can read this from here, but I said the Allman Brothers had had backed Bush, but actually Kingby writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com and corrects me. The Allman Brothers band did not play for the scumpublicans, as he calls them. It was Leonard Skinner. Whom, from that point on, made my S-list, as well as the Dickie Betts band. That's right. Now he can go to hell as well. 38 Special sucks. King B, tell us what you really think, okay? Let's see. Let's take another call. Hi, it's WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Good evening.
Hi.
How are you? Hey, it's Jules calling from Miami.
Oh, God, it's 10 degrees here.
Well, you know, it's actually in the 50s in South Florida.
Oh, man, you must really be hurting.
Don't feel so bad.
Okay. What's up, Jules?
Well, I've been listening to the show. Your last caller, who, you know, just a few points. You know, I feel so sad that he's going to Iraq. I feel so sad. And it brings me back to, I was in New York City over the holidays for Thanksgiving, and I met this guy when I was out having a smoke outside of this bar, because, you know, you can't smoke there in New York. And we talked, and he said he was leaving for Iraq. And I looked at him, and I said, you know, I just really wish you weren't going. And he said, no, I volunteered for that.
Hmm.
I volunteered to go. And I said, well, why would you do something like that? Well, because I want to do this for my country. And so then I hear your caller saying, well, if we're anti-war, then we hurt the soldiers.
Yeah.
Well, have we ever, have any of these people who, they, this guy says to you, are you watching CNN?
Like what? No, if you watch CNN, you'd probably support the war.
Exactly, exactly. And I spent a little bit of time with Fox News tonight just out of curiosity. Oh, just repulsive. How could you not? If you watch that, it's brainwashing anyhow. So I say to this guy who's going to Iraq, what's your name? He said, my name's Jeremy Tuesley. And I made him write it down. I gave him my email, and I said, he's going to Fallujah, Peter.
Hmm.
And I said to him, please email me. And, you know, every day when I look at the list of the fatalities, I look for his name.
Wow. You know, actually on my site, it links to the CBS listing of all, I don't know what it is now, 1,300 and something. And I said the other day, that or one of these shows, that I often look at those lists and it, at some point it becomes just sort of political. Like, see how bad the war is. There's that, now it's up to the numerical representation of 1,350. And then I go to that site and I just see these faces of these people that are dead.
Yeah, and people, we're so desensitized by the media that we can't even Well, you and I can, quite obviously, and people with a conscience can, is that most people can't or never even put a face to those numbers or those names. Or, I mean, every day we look in and see how, you know, so many people were killed over there. And in the name of what?
Hmm. Well,
in the name of what? It's an illegal war. And here's the deal. I really believe that in this country, so many people are, it's too much to handle.
You mean emotionally?
They can't deal with it mentally.
Well,
you know?
Yeah. I mean, here is this this Detroit News headline. We reverse their slogan and say, if you read the news, you will never know, but whatever.
True.
It says, deadliest attack, this is about the Mosul bombing, deadliest attack could signal longer U.S. stay. Longer.
I mean, longer.
Yeah. So, in other words, how many more Mosuls are there going to be? How many more? That's why one of the things that these folks will never answer. I mean, obviously, if we said we were going to lose 100,000 men and women in Iraq, people would say that's unacceptable, right?
Right.
Well, how about 50,000? How about 25,000? I mean, where? I mean, I've got a limit. I'm 1,350 is too many already.
Yeah. One is too many. Two is too many. And, you know, so then another thing that your caller said was, you said to your caller, what are the reasons? And then there was this oil and safety.
Yeah.
Oil and safety. Okay. Well, let's think about that. I mean, really.
Yeah.
Very depressing.
Well, here's some, this maybe won't be as depressing. This recent survey, let's see. Washington Post, ABC News poll, 56% in surveys say Iraq war was a mistake. I mean, is there really 44% that think it was a good idea?
Well, yes, there are. And guess what? My father is one of those.
Uh-oh.
I was home, you know, over the holidays in November, and he was watching Fox News, and I said, oh, Dad, that's the worst. He goes, CNN's the worst. And I go, oh, my God.
Well, they've actually done studies to show that that the more you watch Fox News, the less you have, the less accurately your perception of facts are. Not opinions, you know.
Right,
But like a majority of Fox News, people that watch Fox News all the time thought that Saddam Hussein, in fact, was discovered to have weapons of mass destruction. About 40% of them thought he had actually used them during the war. So, you know.
Yeah, it's very frightening.
Yeah, it
is. And so I say to the former caller who said, doesn't it hurt the soldiers to be anti-war? No, it hurts the soldiers to be in an illegal war.
There you go. Jules, thanks for calling from Miami. What, in
the
50s? Better get your overcoat.
Yeah.
All right. Ooh, thanks for calling. I appreciate it. Tom from Ann Arbor writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. You know, there's not enough of my brain to do this show. I sure depend on you folks. This is absolutely correct. Tom says, your previous caller, not Jules from Miami, but the young man who was going off to Iraq, who's in the Army and in the process of heading to Iraq, aware of Paul Rykoff and Operation Truth. Paul Rykoff actually was, I interviewed him, and he formed Operation Truth. And if you go to optruth.org, OPTRUTH. .org. You can go through my website as well, peterwerby.com. What does he think of those folks? They've been there and they have a very different perspective on what we're doing in Iraq as well as how we are doing it. Pardon me. And then there's also Military Families Against the War. I don't know if that's their website. But there's, in fact, there was, oh man, where did I see that? 600 military families have contributed this amazing amount of money for the relief, including the parents of men and women who have died in Iraq, to rebuild Fallujah. to give them direct aid. And so there's Operation Truth. Oh, yeah, and there's the Iraq Veterans Against the War. I mean, how come I don't think of these things? I need Tom from Ann Arbor to tell me. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. But anyways, caller, if you're still listening, go to my website, peterwerbe.com, P-E-T-E-R-W-E-R-B-E.com. Over in the left, there's a vet standing in front of a flag, and you can click on that, and it'll take you to this immense amount of opposition that's present in the armed forces itself. People doing everything under the sun to resist this war. So, it's not the majority of people by any means, but it's certainly enough ferment inside the military, people that have these stop orders that have they've been held longer than they should be, people that are there with without proper equipment, people that just politically think this war is a damnation. So, and one final thing too, saying essentially what he did is pretty undemocratic. We want to go over there to create a democratic system, but he's suggesting that I not make my opinions known. I don't think that's too good an idea. Ralph Dizzy, where are we going with our next caller? Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Pete. How are you?
Doing good, thanks.
Good. I guess I'm going to take a little bit of a different tact. I want to commend your caller two callers ago for making a very difficult decision at a time like this to join a voluntary branch of the service. That being said, I think it's very important that he understand that he's dealing with a president who's trying to rewrite history. He's got this gentleman into believing that we went over there to bring freedom to these people.
Mm-hmm.
That is not the reason we went over there. You stated it yourself. I mean, how many times does it have to be stated? We went over there to eliminate the world of weapons of mass destruction. We were led to believe that they were on every street corner. We got over there, and lo and behold, oops, not there.
Yeah.
So what do we have to do? We got to spin it real quick the other way and make it sound like, gee, we're doing something humanitarian, which in a very indirect sense can be construed that way. Saddam Hussein's a bad guy, and he's gone. And, yeah, the world's a better place because of it. But let's not rewrite history. That's not why we went over there.
Well, there's that concept called altruism, that you do something for which you gather no gain whatsoever. And, I mean, at some point, I mean, in other words, if you told me that you had taken every penny out of your bank account, sold your car and sold your home and taken all the proceeds and went down into one of our poor areas like the Cass Corridor and given it all to the poor there, I would have thought, well, there's a very generous but foolish man. In other words, you have just, you may have helped other people, although you certainly haven't killed any of them, or destroyed the Salvation Army sleeping quarters, but you have then hurt yourself so badly. So are we that altruistic that we're eroding the economy of this country, that we're killing tens of thousands of those people that we're trying to help and suffering over 10,000 casualties ourselves because we so want to bring democracy to Iraq? I mean, I hate to be mean to people that... but that's pretty foolish if you believe that.
Well, it absolutely goes deeper than that. I mean, we want to bring democracy to everybody, and certainly I believe there's a lot of peoples in terms of countries that want to have that. But we want to have them believe it's democracy and freedom the same way that we enjoy it. And, you know, to put a cell phone in every pocket and all that kind of stuff. And that's the way we relate to it. It's not going to be the same. And because we get received with anything but the laying down of arms and the throwing roses at us, which, you know, we know that's not happening,
mm-hmm.
We stand back and scratch our heads. So, in the safety point of things, nobody from Bush on down has ever even intimated that he had the capability of launching anything anywhere near our borders. My goodness, they can barely get anything to Israel.
No. Bush said that Iraq had launched ships that had these drones, these unmanned drones on it that were capable of delivering biological or chemical warfare to the heartland of the United States. I mean, that's when they were really going nuts. That he was going to develop nuclear weapons. All of that was a lie. By the way, senior members of parliament, this is from the Independent in London, says British troops will be in Iraq for at least a decade. One senior member of who was visiting said it will take 10 to 15 years at least before troops can fully withdraw. It is another Cyprus.
Well, the only other thing I would point to in that regard, then, Peter, is something that a lot of people do forget, too. I think the last troop numbers I heard in Afghanistan is somewhere between 15 and 25,000 troops.
Right.
Okay. People need to take a look at the Korean border, where we have maintained 35,000 troops since a war that ended over 50 years ago.
Well, that is a good historic analogy. Besides, we always talk about Vietnam. Korea is another one as well. You're right.
All we need to do is look at that, and this smacks of it more and more each day.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Everybody in Iraq, of course, is getting paid by you and me. They take our tax dollars. And besides just giving it to Halliburton and those companies to rebuild what other American companies have created weapons to destroy, everyone there gets paid through us. I mean, they don't have any revenues. They don't have any income. So there's millions of dollars, a lot of it in American cash. And after, let me see, what's the name of this thing? Suicide bombers said cause of Mosul attack. So we knew that. But a lot of times there's stuff buried way in here. It said some residents watching the U.S. troops in Mosul after said that they were worried about the possible repercussions of the base attack. Sadiq Mohammed, a grocer, expressed concern that the U.S. military would use the attack as a pretext for a major crackdown in the city. So they're worried that Fallujah, that type of attack, is going to occur. It could very well. Izdahar Kamal, a civil servant, praised those who had carried out the Tuesday attacks on the U.S. troops. Kamal said, "It was a heroic operation. This is jihad, and he who carried out this attack is a hero." What flagged my attention on that? I mean, there's so much, because this is corporate news, Yahoo News, Associated Press, and what have you. So you got to read between the lines. Izdahar Kamal, a civil servant. In other words, he's a paid employee of the Mosul government. And who's paying his salary? The U.S. government. Where's the U.S. government get all this money? Gets it from you and me. So a man who's being paid with our cash says this is a good thing that our soldiers were destroyed in the manner that they were last Tuesday. And this is who that the soldier going off there just told us, how welcome we are there. Well, I doubt that. Extraordinarily, sincerely. And if somehow January 31st we're going to have these elections, everything's going to get better. I doubt that, too. In fact, I suspect things could even get worse. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi.
Hi.
This is Crystal from Detroit, Michigan.
Yeah, what's your first name?
Crystal.
Oh, hi, Crystal.
Hi. I have quite a few family members and friends that are over in Iraq fighting right now.
Uh-huh.
And I just lost my father recently due to the war. And I think it is appalling what they put these soldiers through. And the Iraq people don't even care about their own kids. They have sent 7-year-old kids with bombs strapped to them just so that they can kill our soldiers.
Well, Crystal, I've never heard that one before.
I mean, there was talk about here, a 14-year-old girl walked into a store and blew it up.
Mm-hmm.
With a bomb strapped to her.
Well, you know what happens when people feel like their country's being invaded and occupied? They do quite a few things. I mean, you think about how the Native Americans resisted the invasion of the Europeans in this country. I mean, at first they welcomed us, but a few hundred years later, they were ambushing wagon trains and scalping people, right?
Right.
Yeah. When you get in other people's land, people usually don't like it too well. But your father was killed in Iraq?
Yeah.
That's horrible.
And I heard that they were supposed to reopen the draft.
Well, we don't know. It would be so unpopular that it's hard for me to imagine that they're going to do that unless there is some new major terrorist attack, and there hasn't been since September 11th.
Right.
Yeah.
Because that concerns me because, you know, I mean, my husband's of the age and, you know, we're getting ready to have a baby and I don't want him to have to go out there.
Well, nothing so far. I mean, but there's a lot of stuff beneath the surface. They have the draft boards all ready to go. But, I mean, on one hand, they have the draft boards all ready to go. On the other hand, they say they don't plan anything. Well, Crystal, it's, I mean, like I say, I said before, you can always talk about, like the war and everything in political and economic terms, but when it comes home to you with the loss that you've experienced, it's certainly different. I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, thank
all right.
you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah.
Bye-bye now. Okay, we'll take at least one more call, because remember, I got what I've been doing, I play a little snippet of a tune at the beginning at 11 p.m. Eastern time, and then on the way out, we'll play the whole song. It's War Pigs by Ozzy Osbourne and Black Sabbath, a fierce anti-war song, I think from 1971. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Good evening, Peter.
Hi.
My name's Mike from Brighton.
Hi, Mike.
And how you doing?
Good.
After listening to several of your callers, I think there's a misconception on some of the facts. George Sr. is the one that declared war on Saddam in Iraq, not George Jr. We were still at war with Iraq during the Clinton administration, and yet Bill Clinton did nothing to help put an end to the war. I mean, he did absolutely nothing. I've had several of my buddies fight in the original, in the first war.
Yeah.
Or the first part of the war, I should say, before UN took over with the inspectors and everything. And it upsets me to hear that people are so against this war. I mean, it almost comes across that we should absolutely do nothing. One caller said, what business is it of ours to be over there?
Well,
if that's
good.
The attitude that people want to take, then, hey, we shouldn't have gone over there to help liberate, Europe during World War II.
Well, you got to remember, the Nazis declared war on the United States.
It was instigated by the bombing of Pearl Harbor.
Right. Right.
Right.
But
my point here is that in World War II, I mean, if you're going to take the attitude that we shouldn't get involved, then, I mean, you know, you're going to let people like Hitler's and Saddam's all across the world take over and constantly conquer smaller countries.
Well, I mean, Saddam Hussein was a creature of the United States, was supported by George W. Bush and Ronald Reagan, so that the United States, and particularly these Republican administrations, bear grave responsibility for the existence of Saddam Hussein in the first place. So this is a situation that almost is unsolvable. I mean, no matter what we do, if we stay there, we're damned, and if we withdraw, we're damned, and maybe not even us. We'd at least be able to cut our losses. But the Iraqi people, because of the policies of Reagan and Bush particularly, and Clinton-Gore, which allowed, as you said, essentially a warlike situation where the country was continually bombed, these sanctions that did absolutely nothing except hurt kill hundreds of thousands of Iraqis, as far as I'm concerned, a lot of blame to answer for. As well. Unfortunately, my friend, I have to end this segment of the show. Thank you for joining us. We can pick this up at another time. I want to do a little Ozzy, do some commercials, and we'll be back with a couple of interesting interviews. So hold on. Here's Black Sabbath on WRIF. Whoa! We'll be right back.
gathered in their masses, just like witches at black masses. Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction. In the fields of bodies burning, as the war machine keeps turning. Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah. World stops turning, ashes where the body's burning. No more war pigs have the power, and as God has struck the hour, day of judgment, God is calling. On the knees, the war pigs crawling. Begging mercies for the sin. Satan laughing spreads his wings. Oh, Lord, yeah.
on WRIF, the Night Call Show. Peter Werby here with you. War Pigs, Ozzy Osbourne, Black Sabbath. I just wanted to read you this one email because I kind of said it wrong here. Thanks to Joe and Wyandotte for sending this email in. Families of U.S. troops killed in the offensive on the Iraqi city of Fallujah are to travel to Jordan next week with $600,000 worth of humanitarian aid for refugees of the attack. What, do you get this? Families of U.S. troops that were killed in the offensive on the Iraqi city of Fallujah have raised $600,000, and they're bringing it for the refugees, the Iraqi refugees of the attack. The November assault on Fallujah left 71 U.S. military dead, according to the families, and the Iraqi government said more than 2,000 Iraqis were killed. Rosa Suarez of Escondido, California, said, "This delegation is a way for me to express my sympathy and support for the Iraqi people." She added, the Iraq war took away my son's life and has taken away the lives of so many innocent Iraqis. It is time to stop the killing to help the children of Iraq. Ours too. All right, next week. Stay tuned for our interviews.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby on 101 WRIF Detroit. Peter will be back right after this.
There's big holiday bonus cash plus Chrysler employee pricing available for everyone. And Lease Pull Ahead is back during 2 weeks to deal at Al D.B. Dodge in Clarkston and Hamtramck. How about a brand new 2005 Dodge Durango 4x4 or a 2005 Dodge Ram Quad Cab 4x4? Your choice, zero down at just $99 a month. That's right, zero down at $99 a month. Remember, Al D.B. will beat any purchase or lease price on a new Dodge guaranteed. And Al D.B. will deliver to your home, work, or anywhere. Visit Al D.B. Dodge in Clarkston on Dixie Highway, less than 1/2 mile north of I-75, exit 93, and a Joseph Campo in Hamtramck. Can't get in to see us? Shop by phone. Hamtramck, call 313-893-8300. Clarkston, call 248-620-0800.
They're your hometown dealer, and they're bringing you the best. And they're bringing you the best, because they're your hometown dealer. LGB Dodge.
Better hurry, sale ends January 3rd at 9 p.m. Check your local paper for details.
Are you one of the millions of men embarrassed by premature performance in bed? I'm Dr. Richard Cohen, MD, men's performance specialist. Premature E is the most common of all sexual issues for men, but now you can prolong your performance and your pleasure with the free 30-day trial of Maxtrol, the new climax control system for men. Maxtrol gives you greater control during intimacy, so you can delay the urge and last longer, which means more pleasure for you and for her. Maxtrol is the confidential, non-prescription way to get the confidence and endurance you want and she needs in bed. I'm so sure of it, I'll send it to you free for 30 days.
Call now and try Maxtrol free for 30 days. You pay only shipping and handling. 1-800-270-9580. 1-800-270-9580. Call now and try Maxtrol free for 30 days. 1-800-270-9580. 1-800-270-9580.
Musicians, mom and dad got you a 12-pack of socks. Santa didn't come through on the new Strat. No cash from Granny for the new Roland workstation. Well, it's not too late. This weekend, it's your turn to save on the gear you really want. It's Guitar Center's Didn't Get It, Gotta Have It savings event. Exclusive end-of-year deals on every top manufacturer. Fender, Marshall, Pearl, Mackie, Shure. Get a 1960 reissue custom shop Gibson Les Paul over half off. This weekend only. Instant rebates of up to $250 on Pro Tools LE systems. Buy one Pro Studio condenser mic, just $99. Get two more mics free. And get this.
Enter for a chance to win a complete home entertainment system courtesy of Zavix Interactive Technology.
Plus, finance the gear. Don't pay for a full year on purchases of $299 or more. Final year-end savings. Digitech multi-effects pedals, $59. Reason software, half off. Buy 10 pairs of drumsticks, get a China cymbal free. Guitar Center's Didn't Get It, Gotta Have It savings event. Your turn to save. End Sunday. Don't miss it.
Don't miss this party. Bar hop at Barnstormer as you celebrate New Year's Eve. Barnstormer Entertainment Complex will feature four different party rooms, rock, country, top 40, and karaoke, all equipped with state-of-the-art JBL sound systems. Don't miss the party at Barnstormer. Great party packages are available, including ones with transportation and overnight accommodations at Holiday Inn Express in Brighton or Hampton Inn in Ann Arbor. Whichever package you choose, you'll be treated to fabulous appetizers, deluxe grand dinner buffet, party favors, balloon drop, champagne toast, late-night pizza, cocktails, and more. And don't miss your chance to be discovered by the National National Lampoon Talent Scouts, who will be mixing it up with you this New Year's Eve. Mention WRIF and receive $25 off the party package or $50 off the hotel package. Don't miss the party at Barnstormer Entertainment Complex. Need a free designated driver? All Points Taxi will drive you to your destination within 15 to 20 minutes of Barnstormer. Call 734-449-0040 to make your reservation. 734-449-0040. Barnstormer is located off US 23 at exit 54, a quarter mile west on the right on M36 in Whitmore Lake.
This is Night Call. This is Night Call. Now, here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. One of the intractable problems, the seemingly intractable problems of the world is Palestine and the events that continue to swirl around there, the death and destruction, the conflicting claims, the murderous death toll that continues. And there are a precious few committed to peace, many of those from the region itself, others who have come to the region itself to attempt to help settle this long-standing dispute as to who has ownership of land. Joining me are two people that have been my guests before on the Peter Werby Show, and they are people that have gone out of their way to make an effort way beyond what many of us have, beyond just a concern, beyond just wringing our hands, people that have decided to intervene with their persons in events over there. Joining me is Hoveda Araf and Adam Shapiro. Welcome back to the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. Thank you, Peter.
And this, I mean, you've probably heard this this cliche analogy. You guys are the Montagues and the Capulets, like from, yeah, right, too many times. Because Hoveda is from a Palestinian-American family and Adam is from a Jewish-American family. And would you say that is it in any way give you a special perspective, or would you have had the same perspective had you not met, fell in love, and married?
I don't think it's given any particular special perspective. It just has made us both more committed, I think, to working towards solving this issue and finding a way to bring peace and justice to the region.
And I'm not the first guy that said, wow, Montague and Capulet. You've heard that before.
We've heard the Romeo and Juliet song, yeah.
The looks they're giving me, folks, you can tell they've heard it more than once. And it's just not a matter, as I said, about intervening in this great crisis in the Middle East, but rather doing it in through an organizational form. Hoveda and Adam were several of the co-founders of an organization called International Solidarity Movement. And tell us some about that, about the founding, when it goes back, and what its goals are.
Well, the International Solidarity Movement was founded, or at least our launching campaign was in August of 2001. And the action started a little bit before that, pretty much with the outbreak of the Second Palestinian Intifada, which is the Palestinian popular uprising against the Israeli occupation. And what we were seeing was that the Israeli military was using massive military might against an unarmed civilian population. And within 3 to 4 weeks after the Palestinian demonstrations started, you had over 100 Palestinians shot dead. And the media was reporting it as clashes between the Palestinians and the Israeli military, but they were not reporting at all that what you actually had was unarmed civilians and a massive military coming in with their tanks and their armored personnel carriers and their heavy weaponry and firing at Palestinian civilians, which were protesting the brutality of the occupation. And so we wanted to try to find a way to do something. We wanted to find a way to change what the media was reporting, how people were understanding the conflict, to try to protect the people that were protesting for their legitimate rights, and to join this struggle and to encourage more nonviolent popular struggle for independence. And so that's when we started putting out calls for any internationals or people that were not Palestinians, Israelis, Americans, anyone that was in the region, to join the Palestinian marches, to join the Palestinian demonstrations, because that way you have people witnessing, you have people with cameras, even when the mainstream media didn't show up, and you have people that were not Palestinian in a sense. In a sense, it provided some protection for the Palestinian people, because unfortunately, the Israeli soldiers, they dehumanize the Palestinians, as does the Israeli military and the Israeli government. And so if you open fire on Palestinian civilians, it's okay. It's another, you know, quote, militant or potential terrorist that was killed. And it's not that way if you have a foreign civilian there. So when you intermix people in the crowds that are protesting, it's a sense of protective shield for the people that are resisting. And we started with actions like that, and it led us to decide as a collective to put out a larger call just over the internet for people all over the world to come join us in organized, nonviolent struggle for Palestinian freedom and independence. And people responded. And since August of 2001, we've had over 2,000 people come from all around the world, over 30 different countries. Some join us for a week, some join us for a few months. And we train them in how to de-escalate situations of violence, how to work in groups. We train them in cultural sensitivity, how to deal with military violence, how to deal with tear gas, and how to deal with bullets to the best of anyone's ability, at least, how to protect each other. And they go live in Palestinian communities and join these people that are struggling every single day just to survive.
And Adam Shapiro, how did you happen to get involved in it? At least your family is from Queens, right?
Isn't from
it?
Brooklyn, almost.
From Brooklyn, okay, close enough for us here in Detroit. And what brought you to the movement? And usually this seems to, unfortunately, break down on fault lines of ethnicity. So one could say very understanding that Huwaida would want to be involved in this. As a Jewish American, people would think, immediately you would support the Israelis. What happened? Happened to either in your life or your understanding or your travels that in a sense, not entirely, but in a sense, put you on the opposite side of what people would expect from you?
Well, I was living and working in Jerusalem and in the region throughout the West Bank and Gaza and Israel, working for an American organization promoting conflict resolution and dialogue and coexistence. I was on the ground starting in 1999, so a full year before the Intifada began. And it was through my work and meeting people and seeing the realities on the ground, seeing occupation for what it was, not just a word or a concept, but, you know, material consequences, settlements, checkpoints, roadblocks, pass laws, all kinds of things that you know, really should be outdated, outmoded, and that should not be allowed to exist this day and age. Seeing that for myself, when the Intifada began, and I saw you know, people I knew going out to the streets and demonstrating and protesting and being met with such excessive military might, and I should add, it's military might that is provided by me as an American taxpayer, all of us as American taxpayers, we're the ones providing the weapons. And it was really as an American citizen, I would say, that I was repulsed by this and realized that here our government and you know, certainly, you know, the majority of the American people want to see peace in the Middle East. Nonetheless, we are by every year giving $3 billion worth of lethal armament to one side in this conflict. And I really felt that I could do something as an American citizen to promote nonviolence and to really put an end to occupation. That really is the root cause of this conflict, and I saw that for myself. And as an American citizen, I realized there is international involvement in this conflict, whether we like it or not, and right now it's taking the form of tremendous military aid to Israel and support for the occupation. We need to bring international aid to support ending the occupation, and I think that's what we did with the International Solidarity Movement.
Huwaida Arif, in your mission statement that you can find at palsolidarity.org, number 3 of your goals is to recruit volunteers from other nations to undertake nonviolent resistance to the occupation of Palestine by Israel. Your critics say you don't live up to that, and in fact you support terrorism.
Sure, a lot of people like to say that to delegitimize our message, because the truth is, as I mentioned, over 2,000 people from all over the world have come to the occupied Palestinian territories and have seen with their own eyes what's really happening. When you're living abroad, even when you're in Israel, what you get from your media is not what's happening on the ground in the occupied Palestinian territories. And certainly in the United States, I've been here for about 3 months now, I see what the mainstream American media reports. and it is vastly different from what's happening on the ground. There's no background given at all to why Palestinians are protesting. All the violence seems to come from Palestinians, and Israel is only always legitimately defending itself, and that's not the truth. And so now you have all of these people that have seen with their own eyes and are repulsed and go back to their own home countries and talk about what they've seen, and they write about what they've seen. And this has threatened the very people that want to keep this image of Palestinians as the violent ones and Israel, you know, as the victim defending itself. And when that begins to be broken down by average people that have seen and are reporting on what they've seen, that becomes very threatening. And so one of the ways to quiet us is to, you know, throw these accusations at us that we're supporting terror. And it attempts to, you know, it threatens the people that are speaking, and it attempts to cast doubt in the people that are listening to us. But they have not managed to quiet us. They've also tried other tactics by preventing people from coming in, detaining people, arresting people. They've killed, actually, sadly, members of the International Solidarity Movement.
Don't go over that so quickly. In fact, I was going to ask that as my next question. You've suffered some extraordinary losses in the International Solidarity Movement. Perhaps the most famous person is Rachel Corrie, who was run over by an Israeli bulldozer trying to defend a house that was about to be destroyed. And there are others?
Yes, there was others. In addition to the great number of people, dozens of people that have been just injured, beaten, and arrested, Rachel was the first foreign or non-Palestinian member of the International Solidarity Movement that was killed. She was killed in an area of Gaza called Rafah, in a refugee camp where the Israeli military have been demolishing hundreds of Palestinian homes. In the past year alone, they've demolished over 1,000 Palestinian homes in this area to make room for, they just want to create a buffer zone on Palestinian land. So they come in with their bulldozers and demolish dozens of homes at a time. Sometimes people don't even have time to get out of their homes or to collect any of their belongings. Well, Rachel was staying in one of these homes that was threatened. It was the home of a Palestinian doctor and his family. And so when the bulldozers came, Rachel and other members of the International Solidarity Movement of her team were trying to block these bulldozers and speaking to them through a megaphone. They were all wearing bright orange fluorescent vests so they can clearly be seen. And speaking to this bulldozer driver that it is immoral what he is doing. There's a family that lives here. You know, think about what you're doing. Sending messages, you don't have to obey orders. In fact, right before the bulldozer ran Rachel over, one of the last things her teammates report her saying is, "What would your mother think about what you were doing?" And the bulldozer just kept moving forward. You know, for about 2 hours before he actually ran her over, you know, he was advancing, retreating. And all of a sudden, he just didn't retreat. He kept moving forward. And she was standing on a pile of rubble, and as he got, you know, close to her and the blade of the bulldozer was moving towards her, it started moving the rubble underneath her, and she fell. She couldn't keep her footing anymore, and he ran right over her. And then when all the other ISMers started screaming, he ran back over her, but without picking up the blade. So the blade ran over her again, and it didn't last very long before she didn't make it. She was killed. And only 2 weeks after that, another member of the International Solidarity Movement, Brian Avery, a 24-year-old from North Carolina, was shot in the face from an armored personnel carrier in Jenin, also wearing a bright orange vest with his hands raised in front of these soldiers. You know, we're nonviolent, we're not carrying anything. And they also just opened fire straight at him. He survived, luckily, and has been going very painful. He's been through his fourth or fifth operation already to reconstruct his face. And 1 week after Brian was shot, another member of the International Solidarity Movement, a 21-year-old young man from England named Tom Herndahl, was shot in the back of the head in the same place that Rachel was killed. He was trying to move children out of the line of Israeli fire because they were just opening fire at people and there were children in the neighborhood. So he went over to try to move them to safety, and they sniped him in the back of the head. He lay 9 months in a coma and then finally passed away.
Yeah. I remember I interviewed Rachel Corrie's parents, which was one of the as brave as they brave a face as they put on. It was still one of the more difficult interviews I've ever done. And I'm sure you've heard the David Rovix song about Rachel Corrie. It's davidrovix.com, R-O-V-I-C-S. Adam Shapiro, I'm sure there are at least some people listening that saying, well, you know, this is all one-sided. You know, there's an Israeli side. These people, as tragic as their deaths may be, as well-meaning as the two of you may be, and the people that suffered this great loss, they shouldn't have been there. What they were intervening in a, you know, in a legitimate military operation, and if they got hurt, it's one of the casualties of war.
Certainly that is one perspective out there, and I think it's a fairly callous perspective. And by that same sort of perspective, then the argument could be made, well, Palestinians, when they go to bomb in Israeli cities, are carrying out acts of war, and the people who are unfortunate to be sitting at cafes were in the wrong place at the wrong time. And I don't think anybody wants to go down that road.
I was
going to
say, you do not believe
that. No, I certainly don't believe that, and I don't think anybody wants to go down that road towards, you know, being so callous about human life. What we need to question is, look at the framework. Yes, we need to appreciate the tragedies for everybody who's involved in this conflict and recognize the person, the human aspect of it. But we also need to step back and question the frame through which we're looking through at this conflict. Is it a conflict between peoples, or is it a conflict between an oppressor and an oppressed? And I think if we step back and look at this through the prism of oppression, then without talking about blame, it doesn't really matter who's to blame or who's not to blame or historical circumstances. What we're left with today, right now, if we're going to move forward, is a situation where we have one group of people, one nation occupying another. Even the Prime Minister of Israel has recognized this and is willing to, has called for the end of the occupation of the Palestinian people, which is interesting because he's the one right now in charge of carrying out the occupation and continues to do so. Nonetheless, if we start looking at this from a perspective of occupation, then we can see there's no one side versus the other in terms of people. Currently, on the ground, we have hundreds, thousands of Israelis who are going into the West Bank and joining the international solidarity movement, joining Rabbis for Human Rights, joining Israelis against the Israeli Committee Against Home Demolitions, Doctors for Human Rights, all kinds of groups that are working with the Palestinian people, working together against occupation, even Israelis who are soldiers in the army who are now refusing to serve in the occupied territories, and their number is reaching well into the thousands now, say, no, we are members of Israel, we are Israelis, we are serving in the army, but we refuse to serve as part of the occupation. And it's along that fault line, I think, that we can draw a distinction and say, if we want to contribute to peace, this is how we have to start looking at this conflict.
My guests on the Peter Werbe Show, Haweda Aref and Adam Shapiro, and they're going to be appearing in person this coming Tuesday, December 28th, and it's going to be at St. Mary's Antiochian Orthodox Church at 18100 Merriman in Livonia. I will have something on my site about that to give you a little bit more information. You can find out about the International Solidarity Movement by going to palsolidarity.org. Haweda, very frequently, I mean, you were talking about how people perceive this, Palestinians, but I think it, in many people, particularly people that aren't of whose ethnic origins don't go back to the region, just see a couple of crazy groups of people, like the Protestants and the Catholics in Northern Ireland. What the hell are they fighting about? And there's a little more understanding about, because they specifically talk about land and there is an occupation and what have you. And granted, Palestinians are always portrayed as a little crazier because they're the ones carrying out suicide bombings. They yell and shoot guns in the air, and the Israelis are shown as just generally weeping over their dead. What's the question I'm searching for? Is how can we make these real issues evident so that we're not just doing sort of images, because images seem to dominate. If that was a clear question, good luck.
it was clear. I think I understand what you're getting at. And it's very difficult. And one of the ways that the International Solidarity Movement tried to address it is by inviting people to come see with their own eyes. And we realize not everybody can come, but everybody comes from a community, whether it's small, just, you know, your family that you have back home, or your colleagues at work or your colleagues at school. that you get involved in your trip when you come. And you're doing things on the ground, you're photographing, you're reporting, and you're taking these very real stories back to your community and educating people about what's really happening. I think that's been one of the most powerful things that the members of the International Solidarity Movement have been able to do. While we are on the ground, members of the International Solidarity Movement try to reach out to journalists also and try to affect the way that they are covering what's happening on the ground, because it is very true that, or sadly, many journalists don't really come to, don't actually make the trip out to Palestinian towns and villages because the Israeli military and government make it very hard. It's very easy to get to an Israeli city, to get to Jerusalem, to get to Tel Aviv. There are no checkpoints, there are no roadblocks, but there are, the Israeli military is surrounding every Palestinian town and village, and there is a massive wall that they are building. They prevent people from traveling. They declare areas, they declare Palestinian villages and cities closed military zones, and sometimes they don't even let journalists in. And so it's very difficult to make that trip. So journalists don't. You know, they stay in the comfortable places and they receive reports from the Israeli military press office. And that's how they do most of their news. But when we can actually get people out or get journalists to actually take our reports, you know, you see a little bit of a change. You break through the stereotypes, what's actually happening on the ground. And I think that's what we're working at. And how do, it's very difficult for people that aren't there. You know, if you're saying, you know, how can you or how can your listeners try to break past those stereotypes? Maybe it's coming to events like we're going to have on Tuesday and listening to what's actually happening.
Well, that leads me to a good question to Adam, that the when you spoke, Kaweda, on December 22nd at Masra Suites in the Arab area of Dearborn, and then you're, I don't know what St. Mary's Antiochian Orthodox Church, but it's obviously not in the Jewish community. You're a Jewish American, and I know that when we spoke a couple of years ago, I'm looking for another word other than notoriety. We'll stick with that one. I mean, your parents began getting death threats, as I remember, had to move out of their apartment in Brooklyn. Do you speak at all in the Jewish community, and what kind of response do you get?
I haven't really spoken too much in the Jewish community, partly because, in addition to my parents receiving death threats, in New York City and in other media across the country, I was portrayed as a terrorist. In fact, the headline "Jewish Taliban," for instance, was used in the New York Post.
About you?
About me.
Really?
So, you know, of course, all of the sensationalism, you know, scares people off. And at a time when people are worried about, anyway, inviting somebody in with a slightly different perspective.
Let me just interrupt you a little. I just don't want people to think I'm giving you too much of a free pass. So, I mean, as I said earlier, critics say you support terrorism.
Right.
The New York Daily, or the New York Post, which is a Rupert Murdoch rag,
exactly.
Isn't it? So you can't believe it. It's like Fox News, folks, except it's in print. So, I mean, these people are making pretty serious charges about you. And you're saying you're nonviolent. How does my listener figure? Is this guy just BSing us, or is he really committed to nonviolence and conflict resolution?
Well, I mean, if the charges were serious and the allegations were in any way, you know, grounded, you'd imagine that I wouldn't be on your radio show, but probably be sitting in Guantanamo Bay these days experiencing
well,
a different type of treatment.
Questioning, yeah, right.
So, you know, certainly how can you measure it? You could go by what I say, what I've written. I've written a lot about nonviolence. I've practiced it. You know, I don't know how else other than to say, look, the ISM and the work that we've done has promoted nonviolence in a way that, in a sense, has never been used before. Palestinians have used nonviolence greatly in their history, many, many times throughout history, and have tried to strategize ways to use it. They've never received the type of international support that we've been giving them over the last couple of years through the International Solidarity Movement. And, you know, for that, the same critics who will call us terrorists are the same people who say Palestinians need to stop using violence and only use nonviolence.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we do it, they call us terrorists. So, you know, it's a lose-lose situation, however you want to look at it.
I've got one last quick question. I don't know, can you see the time on there?
Indeed.
All right, so we want to go to 25. What would it look like? I mean, here's this struggle. What would it look like if it was a, quote, victory for the Palestinians? I mean, this is the Israelis, or many of them, are resisting exiting the territories. So what would be, if Israel, quote, lost, if the Palestinians, quote, won, what would be the effect on both Palestinians and Israelis?
Well, see, we're not looking at a win-lose situation. Israelis don't have to lose. Israel doesn't have to lose at all. What they actually just have to do is comply with UN resolutions and international law and withdraw from what's considered occupied territories, leave the occupied West Bank and occupied Gaza Strip, pull back to Israel proper, and give Palestinians a sense of freedom, and then we'll discuss on how Israelis and Palestinians are going to live together. There are people talking about a one state where people live as equals, one person, one vote, and there are other people that are talking about establishing a Palestinian state and an Israeli state. And either would probably be fine. The two sides have to talk about that, but you can't talk about it as Israel continues to occupy, oppress, you know, and kill the Palestinian people. So end the occupation. Let's talk about how to live together.
And thank you so much, both of you, Hoveda Hararf and Adam Shapiro, co-founders of the International Solidarity Movement. And they'll both be in person Tuesday, December 28th, 5 o'clock, St. Mary's Antiochian Orthodox Church, 18100 Merriman in Livonia. Thanks to both of you for being with us.
Thank you.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
There are so many choices in mortgages these days for the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance. Searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 1-800-784-4761, extension 8888. That's Financial Independence Mortgage, 1-800-784-4761, extension 8888. At Treetops, you'll find the space to breathe. Whether your idea of relaxation involves a snowboard and halfpipe, a horse-drawn sleigh, or a deep tissue massage, Treetops Resort is your destination of choice. Come and hit Treetops Slopes, which offer 23 trails and a tubing run, or sit by the fire in Treetops' newly renovated lodge. You can always breathe deeply and find a way to alleviate stress in Treetops Spa. Wrap it up with a stay in one of Treetops' 252 luxurious rooms, including 2 and 3 bedroom condominiums with all the amenities. Treetops is inviting WRIF listeners to enjoy their magnificent facilities with their stay and ski package for just $99 per person per night. Rates are subject to availability. Package includes one night's lodging, full day lift ticket, and complimentary arrival ticket for up to 6 people. Based on double occupancy, requires 2-night minimum stay on certain weekends. Treetops is home to the finest winter recreation facilities in northern Michigan. What are you waiting for? Call Treetops Reservations Line at 1-888-TREETOPS and ask for the WRIF Stay and Ski Special.
Time is running out. Time is running out on the best deal ever on your opportunity to make an investment that can help you make more money, that will change your life forever. Time is running out on your chance to register for Oakland Community College's Winter 2005 semester. Final walk-in registration for winter classes is January 5th, 6th, and 7th. OCC offers thousands of day, night, and weekend classes in literally hundreds of subjects like business, psychology, computer information systems, physics, English, pre-engineering, robotics, and more. If you want to take a giant step to a better life, Oakland Community College is your educational answer. Call 248-341-2340 or visit the website at oaklandcc.edu. Walk-in registration is January 5th, 6th, and 7th at all OCC campuses. Oakland Community College. Get anywhere from here.
Classes begin January 10th.
This is WRIF.com.
Detroit's rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Make your night in the town even better without hitting your wallet. With the Riffs, dine online. You are only one click away from dining at some of your favorite
for only half price. Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com. The Rift presents your opportunity to save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants. Like Tito Ristorante on Erie Street in Windsor. If it's not on the menu, Tito's chefs will custom make entrees to your liking. Log on to www.wrif.com. You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price. But quantities are limited, so you'd better act fast. It's all from the station that delivers you more. 101, The Rift.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com.
This aphorism, oft-repeated, actually is true. If without good health, everything else just doesn't work very well. And that's almost taken to some extent by at least lots of Americans as a right. It's not a privilege, something that we ought to have, access to health care and access to good health care. Well, it's not even true in this country, to be sure, and it gets worse once we leave our borders for what we sometimes call the third world countries. A book has come my way, I think filled with very, very important essays. It's called Sickness and Wealth, The Corporate Assault on Global Health, and it's edited by Meredith Fort, Marianne Mercer, and Oscar Gish. And joining me is Meredith Fort. She's a public health activist and public health practitioner, and she's participated in grassroots health efforts in Guatemala since 1997. She currently works with the give me a chance before I introduce our guest. Instancia Nacional de Salud to help implement the alternative primary health care proposal in rural Guatemala. Meredith Fort, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you very much for having me.
What do I get for Spanish? A C, I'll bet, huh?
Oh, not so bad.
You're buttering me up, but that's okay. How do you happen to be working in Guatemala? How did that all come about?
Well, I started in 1997, and I wound up working with a group that was doing conservation-based work, and I pretty quickly realized that the areas where we were working, people had little to no access to healthcare services and were living in pretty meager conditions and suffering from some of the most basic health problems of malnutrition, lack of access to water, diarrheal diseases, sort of the really, really the basics, and wound up getting interested in trying to find out what could be done to try and help the situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, mostly, I guess what I was getting at is most of the health practitioners I know are doctors and nurses, and they do it right here in the United States. How did you happen to wind up in Guatemala working on health issues?
Yeah, well, I guess I took a different approach, not coming from the health standpoint, but becoming more interested in culture and environmental conditions, and then from that, seeing that really health is such a fundamental concern, and that's more immediate than some of the other interests.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did Guatemala, as opposed to Bangladesh or Angola or something like that? Is it Guatemala you chose for some specific reason, or was it just fortuitous?
I think it was really luck, I guess, probably because it's pretty close. It's a neighbor, and I speak Spanish, so that helped in limiting the number of countries that I could have gone to.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a little about your book, as we should, Sickness and Wealth. It's a series of essays under the subtitle of The Corporate Assault on Global Health. Most people associate bad health and lack of access to medical care and preventative medicine and all of that as a symptom of poverty. And Jesus said the poor will always be with us. So it's we kind of cluck our tongues, but kind of take it for granted that the Guatemalans and the Angolans and the Bangladeshi will have bad medical care. But you're saying that there's a little bit something more structural to this.
Right. We start off the book by looking at the history of health and development strategies and basically look at colonialism and how that initially set up this difference between the first world and third world countries and how the imbalance began by extracting resources, and in the case of Africa, slaves, and the country's opportunities for progress. And then there were other forms of more or less the same line of structural imbalance of some of the major organizations, international organizations, such as the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, that have set up policies that have poor countries indebted to the first world. And in addition to that, there are new types of agreements, such as trade agreements, that have had that imbalance persist. So in terms of countries' abilities to develop, it's been a long process of imbalance, and it persists today.
Now, you talk about, or in the description of you in the book you co-edited, Sickness and Wealth, Meredith Fort, you talk about alternative primary health care. Is that in terms of alternative medicine, or just or explain what that is? And because I guess embedded in my question is whether or not we should be looking for these third world poorer countries to be striving for a medical system like ours, or are there other ways to go?
Right. That's a very good question. Well, primary health care came up as an idea in a UNICEF and a World Health Organization conference in 1978, which was called Alma-Ata. And the idea that was put forth there is health is a basic human right, and that health should be provided for all. And the way to do it is to provide something that's called primary health care. And what happened very soon after that conference is that countries really wound up, just as I mentioned, the debt that they were in, they wound up finding they had really limited resources to be able to put into health. And so they wound up doing very limited health care, of providing really very, very minimal services. And that that idea has really continued for the last about 20 years or so. And so what countries like Guatemala have done is they've said, well, we can't actually pay healthcare workers in rural areas, so we'll just have volunteers do the work. And we can't provide services for everybody, so we'll just do it for women and children, and men and elderly people and teenagers will basically have to go without coverage. And so the idea that the Instancia has come up with in Guatemala is coming up with a proposal that really does have that idea of health should be a basic human right for everybody, and that basic services that are not enough, that it should be comprehensive care. And so there was a group of people that came up with their own proposal locally within Guatemala, and I've done some work in supporting that effort. And it's, for me, it's very inspiring seeing the really limited, low-resource services are not enough. We need to be providing really universal and comprehensive care.
But you must be, in terms of that, it's good to have goals and visions, but in Guatemala, countries like that, you must be very, very far away from that.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah.
Very early on, and at this point, this alternative proposal that has been developed is in just an initial phase of demonstrating that it works, and then trying to encourage the government to accept it, and of course increase the amount of funds that they put in.
Is there a dollar figure on that? If someone came to you, Meredith Fort, and said, "I have this plan for, along with a lot of other people, for Guatemala to bring them basic decent health care," is there a dollar figure, or could you, or pluck one out of the air, just in real general terms?
Sure. what the government has currently been spending per person is $5, and that really has not been enough. And as I mentioned, it was really focused services just for certain people, not for the population as a whole. And so the amount that's in this proposal that's being recommended is between $10 and $15 per person.
Which comes out to, for the population, just a ballpark figure. I want to kind of get on to where money resides in this on this planet, because the name of your book is Sickness and Wealth, and the connection between availability to health care and the lack of funds. So, I mean, we're talking maybe in the 50 million, say, would that be a year or something like that?
We're talking in the millions.
Yeah.
And it's really not, the amount that you have to spend for really good comprehensive care is not that much, but it is a lot more than what is being spent now.
So in other words, a Bill Gates or one of the Walton kids could write a check, essentially, for the decent health care. I guess what I'm getting at, and this is, tell me if I'm going in the wrong direction, that there is a direct connection between the concentration of wealth in the hands of a small number of people and the northern tier countries and the lack of access to medical care for the rest of the world.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's one of the topics that we do try and emphasize in the book, is that it is this inequity that exists between countries and also within countries. Even within a country like Guatemala, if there really were an interest between the sort of the elite, very wealthy families who are mostly in the government, if there really were an interest in providing basic human rights and services to people, it could be done.
Mm-hmm. Are people sicker now in third world countries than they were before colonialism and imperialism came to dominate their regions?
That is a hard question to answer.
You have a. I was looking at this one essay that I haven't read yet by one of your co-editors, Oscar Gish, "The Legacy of Colonial Medicine." I was going in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think it's a very good and important question to ask, and what colonial medicine, the sort of the basic the model that was set up, was really set up for people from the first world countries that went to the colonies. So it really was designed for their interests, and so there was really very little care that was provided to the general population. Although there always have been traditional healers and midwives and other types of care that has been provided internally, but in terms of some of the kind of major problems that we've seen recently, is I guess one of the most well known and biggest examples is the AIDS crisis. I mean, there's been a really dramatic rise. And that's clearly a major problem right now. And also malaria is on the increase as well.
Is this worldwide or in Guatemala? No.
This is speaking worldwide. Yeah.
It certainly is. Now, one of the things I was thinking that has certainly changed since the arrival of the Europeans or the European invasion in the beginning as early as the 16th century in the Americas was that there wasn't this large concentration of populations in cities, which, of course, has always been a breeding ground for mass illnesses and having them sometimes go unchecked, even European cities like the bubonic plague and all of that. Do you operate in Guatemala in cities or in rural areas or both?
At this point, the coalition that exists is a nationwide coalition that has representatives from urban areas and rural areas. And the problems are different. Certainly, the rural areas, it's really kind of having access to land and water and sort of the basics, and the access is much less, and households are really dispersed. And then in urban areas, it's other types of problems. You talked about the plague, but now it's more of it's crime and violence and drug addiction and more of urban problems that require responses that are not just providing healthcare mm-hmm. services, but that really do have a big effect on health.
Well, Meredith Ford, I suspect without asking that you're there and act out of reasons of compassion. Are there things that on a regular basis just break your heart or make you angry because you know that with some simple intervention, just a small amount of funding, that what you've seen would not have occurred?
Yeah, I think the hardest thing to see is children who don't have enough food to eat. I think that is probably the most heartbreaking. And you know, holding children in your arms that weigh next to nothing, just knowing that could so easily be prevented.
You know, I was thinking I had a little ear infection the other day, and naturally, with my health insurance, I went to my doctor, and he said, "Oh, you have an ear infection. I forget the name of it." But they gave me a little antibiotic, and it went away. And I said, "Do I have to use this stuff?" And he said, "Well, this can simply cure it, but if you don't put this in there, you could stand the chance of going deaf."
Mm-hmm.
I suspect that this medicine is probably not available to any of the people that you deal with. So, I mean, it is, I suspect, these little simple ailments that we take for granted that we're going to have treated that is just not there for the poor of the world. Probably
yeah.
the poor of the U.S.
Right, exactly. Yeah. That is exactly what I was going to say, that, you know, in the U.S., and it's pretty shocking to... Mm-hmm. to know that over 40 million people don't have access to healthcare services, and there's so many people throughout the world that also do not have access to really very, very basic treatments that have been around for a long time.
Mm-hmm. My guest is Meredith Fort. She's one of the editors of Sickness and Wealth, The Corporate Assault on Global Health. It's published by South End Press. You go to southendpress.org. I'll also have a link to this on my website, peterwerby.com. Actually, we haven't spent much time, and I'm almost giving credence to the idea that the poor have always been with us, and we often see what's that woman who always wants us to adopt children in another country or send money, which is, you know, decent enough, but it certainly never changes the equation that goes on forever. Why are corporations, you're saying the corporate assault on global health, what role or what responsibility for the state of misery do corporations play?
Well, we, in the book, we try and highlight some of the specific corporations, like the pharmaceutical industry, which is has a more obvious link to people's living with in poor conditions of health. I guess one of the best examples with the pharmaceutical industry is the AIDS epidemic, where 95% of the people that are living with HIV/AIDS do not have access to treatment because they're not able to afford medicines. So that, I think, is a really clear example. There's also more of the structural setup that we talked a little bit about mm-hmm. in the beginning, that corporations have a major role in terms of, I guess, the example of trade agreements is a good one. They really design policies that benefit them so that people don't have access to basic services like health care because of the policies that are put in place that allow for the corporations to grow and for the public interest to shrink.
Now, you know, I just noticed this. I didn't see this page before, but one of your co-editors passed away this year, Oscar Gish, and you dedicate the book to him. So that's we could probably do similarly for this broadcast as well. So in his memory, you also have written this book, The Struggle for People's Health. Or, I'm sorry, the one above that, The Battle Against Global AIDS, which you mentioned earlier. But in this section, how economic globalization policies affect health, and you talk about South Africa, or the authors of the essays do, South Africa's cholera epidemic, the re-globalization of malaria, and then you talk about AIDS. We tend to associate these diseases, the first two at least, with like the 19th century and the early 20th century. Why are they back with us? And what role do they play, as we were talking earlier, about the corporate assault on global health?
Right. Well, really, I guess we associate them as historical diseases, but they really are diseases of poverty. One of the chapters that you mentioned is about the cholera epidemic in South Africa, and that was basically a result of privatizing water. And so by charging people for water and they didn't have the money to pay for it, they started looking to unclean sources of water, and there was an outbreak of cholera. And in much of the world there still is cholera, but having that direct link to privatization is pretty shocking.
Mm-hmm. It is. In fact, maybe you could describe the photograph on the front cover of your book, Sickness and Wealth. It's funny, you know, I saw it and I almost thought it was, this may sound strange to you, because it's a well-done photograph. I said, oh, that's a well-done photograph. And then what's so hard for us to do is to place ourselves in that situation and try to realize what it would mean to us to be living out, acting out what the young woman in the photograph is doing. Can you tell us that and place it geographically as well? I couldn't do that.
Sure, yeah. The photograph is of a woman who is cleaning her dishes in one of the most polluted rivers in the world. She's in Nepal. And I know I've, to some extent, had the situation of having to only have unclean water in some of the villages that I've gone to in Guatemala, and it really is, I mean, you wind up getting sick, and you use whatever resources are available, and for many people, what is available is unclean water. There's also tremendous pollution in the air, and you wind up it winds up being inevitable that you become sick.
Mm-hmm. The water, the struggle for public access, free public access to water, is something that is unfortunately pretty far below the radar. I have a couple of friends that consider themselves water activists, have even been to conferences like in India. And when you start realizing the extent to which water systems are being bought up, and then particularly the poor of the world, I mean, we pay for water here in the States, but these are people that once had free access to water, that now their meager incomes, many of which are dropping, are hit even harder by having to pay for one of the main ingredients of being able to stay alive. I'm looking at our clock. We don't have much time. Fortunately, there's a section, because all of this is pretty depressing stuff we should know about, by the way, in your last section called Mobilizing for Health, and you're one of the co-authors of one of the articles there, Meredith Fort. I always ask people this. I mean, I tend to almost get hopeless, yet mostly people like you say you can't give up hope. I suspect you feel